on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can download that right now for free from your app store. At 1 o'clock here on LBC, it's Asma Mir. Right now, here's Paul Brand.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Great show. Coming up after 10. Is it patriotism? Is it nationalism? Is it even fascism? What ism do you attach to the flags now flying very visibly in many towns across England? One flag flyer was allegedly firebombed while he put one up in Stevenage over the weekend. On the flip side, a man's been arrested for shouting racist abuse while helping to paint St George's crosses on a building in Basildon. So whatever you see in the Union Jack or the St George's Cross, it is eliciting strong reactions. The Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, says it all feels like people are seeking confrontation. Do you agree? What message do you read into the flags that are now being flown? Look forward to taking your calls in a few minutes.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Figures show more than half of shoplifting cases across England and Wales failed to identify a suspect in the year to March. The data obtained by the Liberal Democrats shows 800 offences a day go unsolved. Lib Dem MP Joshua Reynolds told LBC more investment is needed to protect the high streets.
I used to work in retail. I worked in shops for a number of years, and you would see time and time again, shoplifters when reported to the police, no action was taken. Police wouldn't show up in the store. They wouldn't request CCTV footage. And so seeing this massive increase in shoplifting in the last year is really no surprise. And that's where we as Liberal Democrats say that we need to invest properly in our frontline community policing.
The government says there are more police patrols to help put an end to shop thefts. Former Labour Home Secretary Lord Blunkett says more action is vital to help tackle the number of small boat crossings. More than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel so far this year in small boats. The government has set out a series of measures to help speed up the appeals system. Campaigners are calling for the new strategy on dealing with violence against women and girls to address child sexual abuse as well. Charities including Barnardo's and the NSPCC are warning the two are inseparable. The government has already insisted its plan will include action on child exploitation and other violent crimes against women and girls. Public transport users could face tougher punishments for playing music out loud when on buses. The Tories want to put forward changes to the current laws, which would include on-the-spot fines. The changes to the bus services bill are being tabled by the Shadow Transport Secretary, Richard Holden.
I think if people are fare dodging, if people are playing music loudly on the tube, then I would suggest that there is probably going to be, if somebody's breaking the law in one area, there's a likelihood they're probably breaking the law in other areas as well. If they're not wanting to be a part of society, I think you'll see this broken window through.
And Emma Raducanu admits she's been feeling the pressure at the US Open since winning the title there 4 years ago. Her first round win in New York against qualifier Eni Shibahara was her first match victory there in since 2021. Novak Djokovic and Aryna Sabalenka also picked up first round wins. Jack Draper begins his campaign later. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK, some cloud developing in the west, rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn, Dad's cooking tea, Ash is upstairs spinning tunes, and the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Paul Brand.
Good morning, you're listening to Paul Brand on LBC, in for James O'Brien this bank holiday Monday. How are you spending yours? Maybe making the most of the sunshine to erect a flag in your front garden or to adorn a lamppost with the Union Jack or St George's Cross. That is absolutely what some people are spending their weekends doing. I drove back to Wales over the weekend to see my family, and I saw many a Union Jack hung on bridges across the M4 as I went on my way. Not something I'm used to seeing a lot of, I got to say, outside of the Olympics, maybe, or VE Day celebrations. But all of a sudden, people want to assert their national identity. Particularly, I'd say, there's been a step change in England. It's something I'm used to seeing in Wales, where I'm from. We regularly raise the Draigoch, the Red Dragon. In Scotland, of course, you see the Saltire. In lots of places that you go, Northern Ireland, flags are very heavy with meaning, slightly different vibe there. And of course, different flags are flown in different communities. But in England, it has typically been less common to see, I'd say, the St. George's Cross in particular being flown. So now that people are flying the flag, particularly in recent weeks, what are they flying it for exactly? What is the message that people want to send? Some say it's patriotism, just very innocent, pure patriotism, pride in our nation. If you're English, pride in the United Kingdom. If you're British. Others, though, do see connotations of nationalism, even fascism. I asked a few minutes ago, what ism do you ascribe to it? Stupidism, says Hannah from Essex. And part of this, of course, is because of the way the far right have hijacked the St. George's Cross in times gone by, or the Union Jack. The BNP appropriated the Union Jack and its logo for many a year before the party went kaput. When I see the Union Jack, I actually see the opposite of those negative connotations. We flew it as a kid on VE Day commemorations, when we were watching the Olympics, as I say. In other words, during moments of national pride, really, national unity, or to remember the defeat of fascism. That flag, to me, represents the efforts of my grandfathers, for example, in World War II, to defeat Nazism, to defeat hate. So why are we allowing some groups to twist the meaning of our flags? Why can't we take pride in the Union Jack? The Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, though, put it quite well, I think, and in quite a measured way, when he said that it feels like all this flag-raising suggests that people are seeking confrontation. Raising a flag is a statement, isn't it? There is a statement attached to raising a flag. What is it that people are trying to say, and what do they want you to say to them in response? In Wales, for example, and look, if you're Welsh, call in, tell me I'm wrong, but this is the way I perceive it. When we raise the Welsh Dragon, sometimes it's just innocent Welsh pride. We're really, you know, really happy that maybe we've won in the rugby, or one of our athletes has won in the Olympics, even if it's under the banner of Team GB. But I think sometimes it's also a bit of an assertion of kind of underdog status in comparison to England. It's us saying we might be smaller than England, but we're passionately proud of that. We're rebellious. We won't have our culture erased. We're up for a bit of a debate, I think, about that, a bit of an argument, you know, at the rugby. If we play in England, there can be a bit of back and forth with the English flags about, with the English fans about all of that. I think that's maybe why it's been slightly more culturally palatable for the Welsh Dragon or Scottish Saltire to be raised, because it's sort of that, an assertion of that underdog status, isn't it? It's about being proud to be smaller but no less mighty than your English neighbours. Whereas the St. George's Cross, I think part of the controversy around that one is that it feels like an assertion of the opposite, because it's an assertion of English pride, English dominance. Some people might perceive it to be within the context of the United Kingdom. Is that true to you? Is that what people are saying when they erect the flag? Are they being provocative? Do they want people to come along and say, oh, you can't do that, you can't raise that flag, that sends a particular message, so that they can then argue back and say, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of being told I can't be proud of being English. I'm sick and tired of having my cultural identity somehow subjugated in their view. Is there a bit of that going on in all of this? I want to know, what do you take from raising flags right now? What message do you think you're being sent? Is it patriotism? Is it nationalism? Is it stupidism, as Hannah says in Essex? What ism do you attached to it? 0345 6060 973. You can text me as well, 84850. Let's talk first to Alan Lester, because he's a professor of historical geography at the University of Sussex and author of The Truth About Empire, Real Histories of British Colonialism. Morning to you, Alan.
Good morning, Paul.
Thanks for joining me. I just wanted to ask you, firstly, why do you think people raise flags? What are the reasons why people want to raise a flag and attach themselves to a flag?
I think they are diverse. And as you've been saying, the flag itself is a kind of empty symbol. It denotes a nation, but it doesn't denote anything more about the character or the nature of that nation, its characteristics. That's always contested. So there's always been struggles over the meaning of hoisting a flag in any particular context. So flags are always contextual symbols. What they symbolise is contextual. And as you've been given some really good examples, I think, that Welsh and Scots people often raise flags in a kind of underdog way to denote an identity of which they're proud, which feels as if it's being crowded out or dominated by an external one. That's often a context. I think what's happening here with the St. George's Cross and the Union Jack and this movement, which does have far-right elements sponsoring it and backing it, is an ongoing attempt to try and paint white English people as underdogs. Underdogs swamped by immigrants, swamped by foreignness, by outsiders, and particularly it's part of a movement towards demonising and scapegoating people seeking asylum and refugees. And this is why so many people find it very uncomfortable to associate themselves with this particular movement, I think.
Do you think that's why, in some cases, politicians, for example, who've jumped on the bandwagon, appear to be more comfortable raising the Union Jack or the Union flag rather than the St. George's Cross? Because the St. George's Cross has more of a link with some of that far-right undercurrent, doesn't it, than typically the Union flag does?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were to examine the sort of poles of uses of flags, at one extreme, there's inclusivity. And, you know, the Union Jack has always been a slightly more inclusive symbol simply because it symbolises a union of different countries into a greater nation, Great Britain, the United Kingdom. When the Union Jack is used, you mentioned the Olympics on state occasions. Even the St. George's Cross can have those inclusive connotations too. If you see an England football match, yeah, it's a celebration of belonging and inclusivity. But by its very nature, the Union Jack tends to have more inclusive connotations than the St. George's Cross. But it all does depend on context. And I think the context in which this is being mobilised at the moment is a much more exclusive one. It's about marking territory for white ethno-nationalist Britishness. And it's very much associated with the use of people draping themselves in both St. George's Cross and Union Jack outside hotels, protesting against the presence of people here seeking asylum. So it does have, I think, slightly different connotations to some of those more inclusive deployments.
I mean, there's definitely a case where to be made that some of the people who are kind of grabbing hold of the flags and flying them very high are attached to the far right, and we've seen elements of the far right protesting outside hotels. I think equally there'll be other people who feel quite frustrated by that and say, look, not everyone who's protesting outside a hotel is necessarily far right. Not everyone who's raising the flag at the moment is far right. Do you think there's something, though, in what the mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, is saying, in that even if, you know, in many cases people won't be far right and they'll be flying the flag for other reasons, but they are maybe also seeking some kind of confrontation in that. Maybe they're frustrated for lots of the reasons that you outline. They feel as though the country's changing, or they feel as though the country's not as good as it used to be, and they want to fly the flag in order to just to send a message of some sort that is more than just patriotism.
I think that there is both certain naivety and a deliberate faux naivety involved in this. So certain people won't feel that they are racist. They won't have necessarily articulated to themselves that what they're uncomfortable with is an increasingly multi-ethnic nation. They won't necessarily recognise ethno-nationalism as part of their character. Not all of them will necessarily feel that, but I think an awful lot of people do have those feelings but don't necessarily articulate them to themselves. But I think there's also a great extent of deliberate faux naivety here. This is being manipulated, this movement, by far-right elements. This Operation Raise the Colours is backed by Britain First, a far-right organisation. Members of the EDL are involved in sending these flags around, and they're doing their best to use this as a vehicle of faux naivety with these protestations. We're just being patriotic. We're just expressing our identity. And there is something much more sinister going on here. It does have these exclusive connotations of being anti-immigrant and particularly anti-refugees and people seeking asylum.
Okay. Alan, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Alan Lester there, Professor of Historical Geography at the University of Sussex, talking about his view of why these flags are increasingly being flown. And as you heard him outline there, he believes that there is something concerning about it. He believes it's like an ethno-nationalism, that people are trying to assert it as an anti-immigrant message. I think others, though, will take umbrage with that and argue that that's not why they're flying them. And as I knew would happen, Peter's messaged in as well and said, can you tell your contributor to use the correct term, union flag, not jack? That only applies when used on a ship. I've been quite careful how I use the term as best I can. But look, everyone says union jack. So let's just use the terminology that everyone identifies with. But I do fully take your point, and you can have this live on air and record it and replay it later if you want to. I fully accept that the correct term is the union flag when not being flown on a ship. But let's just try and get on with the conversation today and not be too pedantic about it. Right. Let me know what you take from the meaning, though, of the flying of these flags. 0345 6060 973. You can text me as well. 84850. Jake says, I think it's wonderful so many people are flying the St. George's Cross to support our Red Roses in the Women's Rugby World Cup. ... I wish. Sandra says, pull the flag nonsense is pathetic. Patriotism is paying your taxes and contributing to society for the benefit of everyone. Painting roundabouts and buildings is vandalism, and we'll all have to pay for that to be cleaned, which takes money away from other vital services. Sue says, hi, Paul. It's the underlying reason for the flags that worries me. The flags are gang-like. The underlying message is, you're not welcome if you're not white. There is nothing patriotic about them at all. And Duncan says, by all means, fly the flag with pride, but not with malice. Thank you for all of your texts. Keep them coming in. Let me know what message you take from flying these flags. The Union flag, the St. George's Cross. What is it that people are trying to say? And do you agree with the Mayor of Manchester that there is some vibe here that people are seeking confrontation about something? They want someone to tell them, don't they? Oi, you can't do that, so that they can reply, don't tell me what to do. I'm sick of being told what to do. I'm sick of being told I can't be proud of being English. They want an argument, don't they? Isn't that why they're being erected? There's a bit of a vibe of that going on, don't you think? It's 10:16. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
This is LBC.
Tesco finest cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic. Slowly baked in butter. Or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
Look, there's a snail! And its eyes are sticking out of its antlers. It looks like an ice cream.
Ella sees a lot more than just a snail. With free kids' glasses from Specsavers, plus a second pair from £10, they'll see a world of wonders. And you'll see a great deal, too. So book them an appointment at Specsavers today, for free. £10 second pair with free glasses from our £65 and above range.
Conditions apply. See online for details.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Paul Brand on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Good morning, you're listening to Paul Brand here on LBC. Ryan says the Union Jack and the England flag represent white supremacy. Racism. And this country is for white people. John on the flip side says we raise the flag to say we are here and proud. Of course, there are some undesirables who abuse it, but most love our country and are not trying to be provocative. So look, a lot of you take different meaning from the raising of the Union flag and the St. George's Cross. What message does it send to you? What do you think people are trying to say by raising these flags all over the place, particularly in England at the moment? Tony's phoned in from Canterbury. Morning to you, Tony.
Morning, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Hope you are too. What do you take from all of this?
Well, the reason I rung in is actually I'd like to just start by saying how disappointed I was that the briefing, the coverage of this subject, introduced an academic that immediately took context into nationalism and far-right extremism. Very cleverly, very subtly, but that was clearly his message. As far as I'm concerned, this is the silent majority simply standing up and saying, we are sick of extremism on both sides. So this is our flag. This is the flag of our country. It's not about colour. I've seen pictures of people from ethnic backgrounds putting flags on lampposts in the paper this week. It's simply this government doesn't know what it's doing. Past governments had an even worse record in tackling any extremism. And clearly, I think it's just a very passive, sensible protest against leadership of the country. It's simple as that.
I think there's been frustration with other governments in the past, though, and there have been all sorts of issues with extremism for decades now. You know, after 9/11, I don't remember seeing so many Union Jacks or St. George's Crosses being flown. It is a particular phenomenon right now, these past few weeks. What is the message particularly that's trying to be sent right now?
Well, I think I've just sort of stated it.
But you said it's about extremism.
Political leadership of the country over many years, but particularly this year, has been so weak in addressing any extremism, irrespective of what causes it, that the silent majority are simply standing up saying, we've had enough. I think it is as simple as that.
What do you mean by extremism?
Sorry, Paul, could you say that again?
What do you mean by extremism, Tony?
I'm sorry, the line's not ground. I missed that question.
What do you mean by extremism?
I think there's extremism in terms of, you could put it at political left and right. You only have to look at the demonstrators, counter-demonstrators, however you want to frame them, outside the hotels, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and how that too erupted on our streets. You name it, we live in a far more polarized society than we did 5 or 10 years ago. And it's really not healthy. You need strong political leadership in environments like that, and we simply don't have it.
But the problem with that argument, though, is if you're saying that the sort of reasonable majority are the ones grabbing hold of the Union Jack and the St. George's Cross and raising it out of pride and patriotism and as a reaction to extremism, the problem with that is that you have got extremists also grabbing hold of the flag and raising it to make their cause. So it doesn't really work.
You have extremists grabbing hold of a number of flags. And I'm deliberately avoiding a comparative conversation here, because you can't win in a comparative conversation. Two wrongs don't make a right. You're absolutely accurate that extremists of a whole range of creeds, cultures, whatever, pick a symbol to represent their narrow view of society. But it's not a healthy debate in this context. One thing you did say, Paul, that I support, is I would have preferred people using Union Jacks. You go to the States, you see the Stars and Stripes fluttering everywhere across all communities. And that is a much more inclusive way of doing it. But I try and understand why the flag of St. George is being used, and I just don't believe it's an extremist use of the flag at the moment.
But you would take the point that those who are using it for far-right purposes, there have been far-right elements outside asylum hotels recently, for example. Elements, I say, by the way, not everyone there is far-right, but there have been elements of the far-right using that flag. So you understand the connotations that people therefore attach to it.
I understand the anxiety that a very small but sadly vocal proportion of society over a long time. You know, I'm a child of the 60s. Things were being waved around when I was a kid by, as you said, the National Front, the BNP. I do understand that. But equally, you could look at symbols on the Socialist Worker Party during that same period and the extreme protests they participated in. Comparative argument is not helpful today. This is about a group of individuals who appear to be pretty middle of the road, trying to express their frustration, in my view.
Okay. All right, Tony, thanks so much for your call. Do you agree with Tony that this is about the silent majority expressing their frustration? They're not extremists. They're not trying to make a particular political point with the flag other than to say we're fed up with the status quo. We're fed up with our government. We don't feel as though they're taking the country in the right direction. 0345 60 60 973. Nick's phoned from Sidcup. Morning, Nick.
Hello. All right. First time I've got on, second time I've called in. I'm broadly in agreement, I think, with the professor, I think, a couple of minutes ago you had on. I mean, I think most of the people who are flying the flags probably are quite innocent. But in general, I find sort of nationalism and patriotism is kind of okay when it's being used as a tool or an instrument of the weak, poor, oppressed, whatever. And much less so when it's used by a dominant class or group or culture or whatever. Despite the fact that I think, I mean, looking around me, I feel like British society's kind of crumbling at the moment. But I don't think flying the flag is part of the answer. And personally, I'm kind of a bit more okay with Welsh or Scottish or whatever flags being flown, or more okay with Ukrainian or Palestinian flags being flown, as opposed to their sort of opposing flags, if that's the right way to look at it.
Russia or Israel.
Yes.
There is something in that, isn't there, Nick? There's that sense that if you're the underdog, then flying the flag is a more acceptable message because you're saying we're proud and we're not going to be defeated, we're not going to be removed, we're not going to be erased, whatever the particular struggle might be in that situation. Yeah, whereas if you've got the upper hand in some kind of situation, whether it's England versus Wales or whether it's Russia versus Ukraine and Russia's the aggressor, then, yeah, in those kind of situations, flying, say, the Russian flag or the English flag feels like more of a statement of saying, aha, we're proud of the fact that we are crushing you, as some people would perceive it in the England versus Wales scenario.
I mean, I don't think England is actually crushing Wales.
No, but historically there's been a grievance that goes back centuries, since basically 1500 when England and Wales were united under one king, etc. under the laws of this land that says that, you know, Wales was sort of dragged kicking and screaming into that union, blah blah blah. We don't need to have that historical debate, but my point being, there's a different dynamic, isn't there, to flying the flags of smaller nations than flying the flags of more powerful nations.
Yes, although on the point you just made, going back to history, I think sociology has a critical distinction between different forms of cohesion, which all societies need to be harmonious and viable. There's a distinction between two types, if I remember right. There's mechanical and there's organic. And there's the mechanical kind, which kind of depends on things like history, reinforcing a common narrative, basically. And then there's the organic side of it, which is where it stems out of collective interdependence. And I think that's a lot healthier. I think depending on history as a source of cohesion actually is always going to benefit the already entrenched power minority. And so it's better to have that organic cohesion where everybody depends on each other because they all work together in some way. So in a way, I'd actually be more in favour with, a currently non-existent flag representing poor and oppressed shop workers or something on minimum wage, or the vulnerably housed and the homeless, something like that, would feel a lot more okay to me than Union Jacks all over, or Cross of St. George all over the place, or even Welsh or Scottish flags. And I know I'm being a bit of an outlier there, but I'm not trying to stir the pot any more than necessary.
Okay, Nick, thank you so much for your call. Les says Wales was conquered, Scotland never was. As far as Scotland goes, the union is voluntary. Good luck having that argument with the Scot, Les. I'll leave that to you. But I think there is something interesting, isn't there, around the Union Jack versus the St. George's Cross. I think the Union flag feels more inclusive, though I respect if you're listening in Northern Ireland, the Union flag there is more contentious because of the Troubles, etc. I think in many parts of the United Kingdom, the Union flag is less contentious than the St. George's Cross, partly because we can kind of get behind it during the Olympics. And when we look back to our history during the World Wars, et cetera, et cetera, those moments that kind of unify us, those causes that unify us, often have the Union Jack flying proudly above them, don't they? Whereas the St. George's flag, you know, obviously isn't a flag that people in Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland would necessarily identify with, and therefore it feels more divisive, and that's why I think the far right in England have managed to claim it in a way that they haven't claimed equally successfully the Union flag, although, as I said earlier, the BNP did use it as part of their logo. What is the message that you think all this flag flying that seems to sort of come out of nowhere the past few weeks, what is the message that is being sent? What are people trying to say? Do you agree with the Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, that they're seeking some kind of confrontation? 0345 6060 973. Look forward to taking more of your calls in a few minutes. Coming up, Donald Trump has been accused of creating a manufactured crisis to justify plans to send the National Guard to Chicago amid worrying signs of increased militarization of the US. We'll be talking to a guest about all of that. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC. It's 10:30 and David Dom has your news headlines.
Palestinian health officials say at least 15 people have been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in southern Gaza. Three journalists have died at the Nasser hospital. The Israeli military has not yet commented. Figures show more than half of shoplifting cases in the 12 months to March failed to identify a suspect. Data from the Liberal Democrats says nearly 800 cases on a day on average goes unsolved. And further strikes by bus drivers with the Unite Union could be happening in the coming weeks. It's in a row over pay and conditions. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK, some cloud developing in the west, rain in Northern Ireland and highs of 28 degrees.
LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Paul Brand on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker now. Just say, play LBC.
Good morning, it's Paul Brand here on LBC. So what message do you think the flag-waving enthusiasts are trying to send by putting Union Jacks on lampposts, putting St. George's crosses on buildings? There have been a couple of contentious cases over the weekend. On the one hand, a man was firebombed, he says, while he was raising a Union Jack on a lamppost in Stevenage. On the flip side, a man's been arrested in the past few days after allegedly shouting racist abuse at a woman while he was painting St. George's crosses on a building. So look, whatever you think about all of this, it is contentious, it is stoking confrontation. That's exactly what the Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, thinks it's doing. He says people are quite clearly seeking some kind of confrontation. What is the message that people are trying to send with all of this? 0345 6060 973. We'll get back to your calls in just a few minutes. One man, though, who is very proud of his national identity is Donald Trump. And breaking news this morning in America is that he's going to send the National Guard to Chicago. The Democrats say this is a manufactured crisis around crime and homelessness and immigration. Of course, we saw this in Los Angeles, didn't we, back in June, and we've also seen him taking control of the police in Washington, D.C. So this is a pattern now with Donald Trump. I want to talk to Scott Lucas, who's a professor of American politics at University College Dublin. Morning to you, Scott.
Very good morning, Paul.
What's going on here? Democrats say manufactured crisis. Donald Trump says lawlessness on the streets of Chicago. What do you read into it?
Oh, it's a man who's trying to be a wannabe authoritarian. And I know how provocative that will be to your callers. So let me set out a couple of facts. In terms of the crime facts, just as it was not necessary to send the military into Los Angeles with respect to any criminal behavior, that was done primarily to help the administration detain and sometimes disappear migrants and asylum seekers. It was not necessary to put the military on the streets of Washington, D.C. Violent crime was down 26% in Washington, D.C. this year. Homicides were down 30% in Washington, D.C. this year. Trump just simply made up the idea that there was a crisis so he could put the National Guard on the streets and then get Republican governors to send their own National Guard units. Now, he's going to do the same thing with Chicago. He doesn't like Chicago. He doesn't like the leadership of Chicago. He doesn't like Chicago as a city. He's insulted it repeatedly. But he's going to roll out this idea that this is his military. These are his troops to use wherever he wants to, and local and state governments be damned. And I think you have to call it out for what it is. It's questionable in terms of whether it's legal. You know, the National Guards are actually answerable to state governors rather than the federal government. It is certainly questionable as to whether it is actually needed and whether it will be effective, even in dealing with crime. And it's certainly questionable when you have a person whose investment is not in terms of national identity, as you put it, but more in terms of his personal identity. He effectively wants to be the guy that runs America.
Mm. So it's a rise in a kind of an authoritarian behavior. How serious do you think is the escalation of arming the troops currently patrolling Washington, D.C.? You know, do you think we could see more armed troops as well in other parts of the U.S.? Is this just going to be a rolling thing, do you think?
I think it's absolutely possible. I mean, because if you go back to L.A. back in the spring when they were having all the song and dance, you know, that was primarily so they could cover themselves as they were illegally sweeping up immigrants. You know, we were told that these folks wouldn't be armed. They were merely in a support capacity. They then put about 700 Marines out on the outskirts of L.A., and they were there for show. Now, when they put the National Guard into D.C., they said, oh, no, we're not going to arm them. We're not. They're just there to support law enforcement, Now, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, no, we're going to have them have guns. We're going to have them have armed. And you can see them doing the same thing in Chicago. And when they did it, I'll tell you what this reminded me of, Paul, because, of course, I'm a native of the States, grew up there. We have an issue with guns, right? But when I went to Lebanon, and I worked in Lebanon, in Beirut, it really shook me to see the military patrolling the streets of Lebanon, walking around armed. Now, there's a reason, if you know Lebanon, why that happened. Here we are in America, which has not had a civil war like Lebanon, which has not been riven like Lebanon. And now Donald Trump is saying, we're going to put military on the streets as part of your everyday experience. And by the way, just one thing to knock back another lie. He says, oh, it's freed up Washington. People are booming. Restaurants are booming. Everybody's going out. It hasn't. Restaurant business in D.C. has dropped sharply since he did this because people don't want to walk about in their day-to-day lives in a military environment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the president says that people in Chicago are screaming for his help. How true do you think that is? Isn't there a case to be made that there are some people worried about the rise in crime, et cetera, and that they might appreciate a stronger hand on the streets?
A lot of people are concerned about crime in across the United States. But the first thing here is that various cities and various states are working to try to bring the crime rate down. And in Chicago, as well as Washington, that crime rate is dropping. Mm. Now, is it ideal? Absolutely not. Chicago's been one of the, you know, most violent cities in the United States. But in terms of the way that we go about it as Americans, we have always gone about it with the idea that you didn't need to bring the military in, that you didn't need the federal government to come in and almost suspend the legal process. And that's what Donald Trump's trying to do. It has nothing again to do with day-to-day crime.
These are Democratic states as well, no coincidence, right? So there's a political message that he's trying to send here as well.
Yeah, so if you talk about a city like New Orleans, which is one of the most violent cities in the United States, great city to visit, but still a lot of crime there, there'll be no talk about putting the National Guard into New Orleans because that's a Republican state. And so it's different in terms of that at a time when the Republicans are trying to almost, in a sense, tilt the electoral system, they're trying to wipe the Democrats out by changing the rules of the game in terms of our voting patterns. They're also trying to change the rules of the game when it comes to our everyday lives in terms of, you know, look, there are issues there. They need all citizens to be involved in it. Everybody needs to be working on it. But rather than dealing with community organizations, rather than dealing with the lawyers, rather than dealing with the educators, Trump's answer is to say, send in the Marines.
All right, fascinating, if not pretty worrying. Scott, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Scott Lucas there, Professor of American Politics at University College Dublin, talking about Donald Trump's move to send the National Guard to Chicago, the latest state to get that kind of treatment from the US president. Right, back to events back home now, and this increasing enthusiasm for the Union Jack and the St. George's Cross flag in England. If the streets of our towns and cities are anything to go by, even our motorways, we're seeing more and more of these flags. What is the message that's being sent with this kind of operation to get more and more flags hoisted up, lampposts, etc.? 0345 60 60 973. John's phoned in from Armagh in Northern Ireland. I want to speak to you, John, because of course flags have always been heavily loaded with political meaning in Northern Ireland. How do you feel about these Union Jacks and St. George's Crosses popping up all over England?
Good morning. It's straight and no nonsense, territorial. I'll give you an example. A new housing estate goes up. The first thing up before the houses are built, Union Jacks go up. It's a message. We don't want any. We only want a certain people in here. We don't want anyone else.
In Northern Ireland, you mean?
In Northern Ireland, you mean? Oh yes, yes.
Yeah. Because I haven't seen that happen anywhere else in mainland Britain. I haven't seen people raise flags on housing estates.
I know. But you know, it's like, you know, what happens in America happens over here, a few years later. Northern Ireland today, Coventry tomorrow. Sorry, Coventry, I'm not using it as an example. But that's what's happening. People are hijacking the Union Jack to use it as a warning. Don't come in here. We do not want you in here. This is our place. And that's what they're doing. I mean, for years, the tricolour, and that was illegal. So that's the next thing, you know, because now you can't fire the Palestinian flag. You can't, you know, it's the same undertones are starting to happen in the mainland that have been happening in Northern Ireland for years.
So do you think that flag flying is, you know, however people try to couch it, as a rise in patriotism and an affection for the country, really it is sending a particular message?
There's a lot of innocence. A lot of people that say, oh yes, we'll fly it. But they don't realise what the undertones are, what they're sending. I mean, it might make people, you know, walking down the street and there's flags flying from lampposts. It's one thing if you're supporting, if the country's gone and won the World Cup or something like that. Brilliant. Fly the flag. But when it's every day, when it's signs on the sides of houses, keep out. Can you imagine somebody of a different ethnicity or a different religion walking down a road? They're going to be very uncomfortable. And that's the message it sends.
All right, John, thank you very much for your call this morning. Really good to get your perspective from Northern Ireland. Lauren has phoned in as well from Hampshire. Morning to you, Lauren.
Hello, Paul. Nice to speak to you. Never spoken to you before.
Great to speak to you too. What do you make of... have you seen many St. George's Crosses going up where you are?
The area that I live in, it's every other house has a St. George's Cross.
And what do you read into that?
I know 100% it's because they're bigoted and racist and that's the area that I live in.
These are your neighbours. Do you really think that?
My neighbours, yeah. We say hello and we live our life inside our own house. Mm. If I flew a flag, it would be a pirate one. But I've recently...
you're feeling a bit piratey, are you?
I am, yeah, I am.
You're very independent-minded then, I assume.
Yeah, I'm thinking about going and cutting them all down. But I have to say, this is what I think needs to be said more often. I haven't got a problem with the Union Jack, that's fine. And I haven't got a problem when we're playing football or anything like that. But the actual mentality behind these people that are running around putting St George's crosses up... It's for no good purpose other than to intimidate and say this is a whites only area, and you're not welcome here if you're not. And I think that the journalists or left wing leaning journalists need to make much more of a point of saying that every time you put up a St George's cross, you're celebrating, you are raising a flag to a man who was born in Turkey. Died in Palestine.
Oh, St. George,
and he had a beautiful brown face. So good on you. Put them up everywhere. But I want to put ones underneath saying born in Turkey, died in Palestine.
You want to add the historical context for the people raising the flag?
Yes, because I think that they're so stupid they don't even know that. Mm. I really think they lack the intelligence to know the man had a brown face.
All right. Well, look, Lauren, thank you very much for your call. So interesting to hear from Lauren, who's seeing a St. George's cross on every other house in her area in Hampshire. And she thinks it is a sign of racism, in her words, of bigoted neighbours where she lives. Do you think that's fair? Is that why everyone's raising the St. George's cross where they're raising it over the past few weeks? Underlying whatever they're saying on the surface, is that what's really going on, or do you think it's patriotism, it's pride in the country, and it's not necessarily saying other people aren't welcome, it's pride for everyone who lives in England? What do you think? 0345 6060 973. What message do you take from the number of Union Jacks and St George's crosses that you now see flying across England? More of your calls to come in a few minutes' time. It's 10:46. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
Coming up this week on LBC, Penny Mordaunt.
That we want to demonstrate to people who might be partners in the future that we can be trusted, that they can work with us in this way.
Emily Thornberry.
Zelensky doesn't trust Putin. And there are times when you wonder just how much Trump trusts Putin and seems to be quite naive about it.
James Cleverly.
It didn't have to be like this. We were closing asylum hotels. We had a series of plans.
Ed Davey.
I'm still pretty worried that Donald Trump just wants to do a deal with Vladimir Putin, and that comes first rather than the interest of Ukraine.
4 days, 4 voices. Starts tomorrow from 10 a.m. only on LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it. The
customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Hey, Mum. So you know we met Zara, my financial advisor?
Yeah.
Yeah, from St. James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan so you can get that bungalow near me.
Oh,
and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Hoi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new card orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability. T's and C's, the Lantis Financial Services.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Paul Brand.
Good morning, it's Paul Brand here on LBC. We're talking about the flags and their meaning to you. Jonathan's phoned in from Nuneaton. Morning, Jonathan.
Morning, morning. Thank you for having me on.
What do you read into the flags that are being raised? Have you seen many in Nuneaton?
I've walked the dog this morning. There's some new flags gone up. There's a roundabout been painted in the St. George's Cross. I haven't got an issue with it at all. I haven't got an issue. But I do think that there isn't a coincidence in what's going on just now with all these flags going on and what you see on social media and stuff from certain politics, shall we say. So there is that correlation, I think. So that's unfortunate because I think it does get hijacked a bit. You know, and it's unfortunate that this is, like, you're getting all these flags coming up at this moment in time. Again, I just think, oh, that's a shame. I've always thought this for quite a long time, that the English in particular have got an identity issue which they need to resolve. They need to look at themselves and see. I think it's a discussion that the English need to have as to what does it really mean to be English? Mm. You know, where the Scots and the Welsh, they could tell you that very easily. They've got, and they're comfortable with their identity.
I feel I feel bad though sometimes for English people that they can't just innocently express a pride in being English without being accused of having other connotations or of being sort of oppressors. I mean, when I was at school in Wales, we would literally put the Welsh flag on everything. My homework diary was covered in Welsh flags and Welsh sayings. Yeah. We were so proud of being Welsh. Yeah. And I think, like, if you did that in England, even if it was just an innocent expression of your pride in being English, you'd be questioned about it and people would say, you know, oh, what do you mean by that? And, oh, isn't that a bit right-wing?
Absolutely.
Or a bit far right? So it's quite tough, I think, as an English person to find an expression of your national pride that doesn't trigger other people in some sort of way.
Exactly. And that's why they need to, the politicians and need to tackle this. I think it's a real issue with the English because, unfortunately, the people that do fly the flags and stuff, like that, what's going on now, it is for a nationalist sort of to the right of politics or far right, agenda in many ways. So people, when they see someone with an England flag, they think, ooh, he might be racist, or he might be this, he might be that. They're suspicious.
It's a shame as well.
And it's not helpful.
It's a shame that it's come straight off the back of the Women's Euros as well, because, you know, I think during the Euros, you'd see lots of St. George's Cross is flying, and it would make you happy, you know. Again, you know, I might be Welsh, but I supported the Lionesses. I'm not one of those Welsh people who wants England to lose all the time. But I supported the Lionesses, and you know, I thought for a few weeks we all saw the St. George's Cross flying and thought of the Lionesses. So it's a shame, really, that it's been hijacked in this way by some far right groups that have kind of spoiled the flag for lots of other English people.
I mean, unfortunately as well, with the football, with the men's football, over many years, the England fans have not done themselves look good flying the England flag with their behaviour, you see. Mm. And that's been the most dominant sort of flag flying is through the football, really, in generally. But there's... And that's been unfortunate. I mean, even like in recent times, when they were at the Germans hosted the Euros, I think, or the World Cup, I can't remember which one it was. I mean, they were there singing 10 German bombers and stuff. And you're thinking, you wouldn't get that from the Welsh or the Scots, I don't think. Mm. That kind of, you know what I mean?
Not against the Germans, but I've got to say, there are some Welsh rugby fans who can behave quite badly sometimes at rugby matches and say some things that aren't very nice about English people in particular. So I think all sports events can sometimes, once a bit of beer is added into the mix, can get out of hand, and there's always a minority that spoils it for everyone else. But I take your point that kind of football hooliganism has definitely not contributed positively to the way people perceive the St. George's Cross over the years. Jonathan, thank you for your call. I want to get Patricia in as well in Bromley. Morning, Patricia.
Oh, good morning. I've been curious this morning listening to all these remarks about the flag. Whose country is it? This is England. That is the English flag. Mm-hmm. I'm 85 years old, and that's what I've been taught all my life. And through the war, after the war, people went without everything. They treat the old people disgustingly in this country, and I can tell you now, if there was another war, they'd never get the men to fight like they did before, because they'd give our country away. You can't say anything, but they can say what they like, anyone that comes here. They've got rights over the English people. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. My husband and I started flying the flag after we retired, and we went on a couple of cruises. We went to America, Canada, beautiful countries. They fly their flags with pride, but the pride's been knocked out of the English. If you look at an atlas or a map, it no longer says England, it says London, UK. This is England. UK is a separate thing. Ireland is Ireland, Scotland and Wales. I've got Welsh relations in the family. They're Welsh. We don't dislike them, but they're British. They're Welsh first, British second. I'm English first. I cannot sign a form in my own country which says English on it anymore. I always cross out white British. I'm English, born English, never changed my nationality.
So is it the same?
And I was born with free speech, and I will say what I like because I've never been notified that my free speech has been taken away.
It hasn't been taken away. You're saying exactly what you want right now, live on national radio. Free speech is alive and well in this country, and you are enjoying that, right, as we speak now. Patricia, which flag is it that you fly, the St. George's Cross or the Union Jack?
The St. George's Cross, because that is the English flag. They keep making out because those vandals had it for a few years, but the people let them. We were daft as a brush. Nowhere else would they let them treat people different. We've got soldiers that fought in the war, sleeping on the streets in Bromley, here and there. We've got tramps now, which we never had after the war. I don't remember that. I can remember the war. I know what it is to be down in air raid shelter. These people don't, who come on and say they're hard up. They expect the government to feed their kids, clothe their kids, everything. They don't know what work is.
All right, with respect, Patricia, there's a lot going on here that I can tell you're angry about lots of different things here. When it comes to flying the flag, though, I think you said earlier that you want to send a message that this is England, this is for English people. What do you mean by that? That you feel as though Englishness is under threat?
Our country's been taken over by foreigners. And I was always taught you only flew your own flag in the country unless it was like that. They shouldn't be flying Palestine flags.
What about the Ukrainian flag? Should we?
Oh, yeah, but that was because we were in the war with them and we were helping them. It's a different thing. That is a totally different thing.
Well, we sent assistance to them, but we weren't fighting in the war with them.
No, but I'll tell you what, they wouldn't raise an army now like they did before. I can tell you that, having quite a few grandsons and all, and I could do everything in my power to stop them fighting for the country now.
What do you mean?
I'd like to say that in future, and as the last couple of times, I'll vote for Nigel Farage. Right. Whether he'll be good or not, I don't know. But I don't think there's any other hope for this country to straighten up. And the Labour Party, I was Labour for years and years. And this party now is full of women. We've got a weak country. You've got women in jobs that should be men's job, police force, things like that. I know I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, that is quite old-fashioned.
I always look to my husband to protect me in their ways.
Well,
and
Patricia,
the feminine
that's your prerogative.
Part,
no. I think there's a lot of women out there, and certainly a lot of men out there too. We're very glad that women are now in the workplace and have a lot more equality in the workplace. And also, I think a lot of people would take issue with you saying that foreigners have taken over the country in your language there. But look, Patricia, I think you've got across part of the reason why some people are flying the St. George's Cross. So take from Patricia's call what you will. We've run out of time in this hour, so I don't want to keep her on any longer and keep going over those points. But hey, look, that hour was pretty revealing, right? In terms of telling us what message people do take from the St. George's Cross and the Union Jack. Coming up after 11, though, what do you typically spend on your supermarket shop? For a family of three, in my case, I reckon it's pretty hard these days to leave the supermarket without spending about £100 on a weekly shop. But some lucky people are leaving having spent absolutely nothing when they pop into the shops. Because as most of us have witnessed by now, they are just taking whatever they want for free. And it's no wonder, because 800 cases of shoplifting went unsolved every single day last year. Nothing happened. In other words, no consequences for stealing whatsoever. Have we become a country where some think they can just take whatever they want? And should we as citizens intervene?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. The Hamas-run health ministry says four journalists are among at least 15 people killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in southern Gaza. It happened at the Nasser hospital this morning. LBC's Blake Sifton is in Tel Aviv.
The journalists are with Reuters, NBC, Associated Press, and Al Jazeera. And Reuters confirmed as well that another of their journalists was also wounded in that strike. And they were actually operating a live video feed from the hospital, which agencies like them and AFP and AP do, so clients can access the picture. And the journalist of theirs who was killed was actually operating that feed, and it went dead when the missile struck.
The Israeli government hasn't yet commented. Nearly 290,000 shoplifting cases in England and Wales over the last year have gone unsolved. Data analysed by the Liberal Democrats show less than one in five resulted in a charge, while more than half identified no suspect. Campaigners have warned the pledge to tackle violence against women and girls can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sex abuse. Charities have written to the government with their concerns over the upcoming strategy. LBC's Helen Hodinott has more.
Ministers have promised to halve violence against women and girls in a decade, with a strategy expected to be published really soon now in September. And advocate groups say this is a golden opportunity to make a real change. But earlier this month, it was revealed that child sexual exploitation and abuse might not be included in the scope of the strategy.
The government says there will be targeted action. A man who survived being poisoned with mushrooms in Australia says he only felt half alive following the death of his wife. Ian Wilkinson ate a beef Wellington laced with the toxic mushrooms 2 years ago, which killed his partner and two friends. Erin Patterson will be sentenced next month for three counts of murder. And it's understood Arsenal winger Bukayo Saka will miss this weekend's Premier League game with Liverpool. The England midfielder was injured in Saturday's win against Leeds. He'll also be sidelined for the Three Lions World Cup qualifiers with Serbia and Andorra next month. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK. Some cloud developing in the west, rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Switching broadband providers. What a faff. Do it next week, week after, or next year. But what if it was actually easy? Suddenly, switch to Virgin Media's lightning-fast broadband and we'll handle the whole process for you. That's smooth, faff-free switching. Virgin Media. See what you can do. Switch today at virginmedia.com. New customers, Virgin Fiber areas, subject to restrictions and credit check. No setup fee, online only. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Paul Brand.
Good morning, you're listening to Paul Bunty here on LBC. Great to have your company. This bank holiday Monday, that call from Patricia in the last hour, just right at the end there, has been dividing opinion on the text. And don't think Patricia probably cares, to be honest. She's got her views and she'll stick to them. I don't think she's going to be upset by what some people are messaging in. There is support for her as well, though. I think really what Patricia's call demonstrates is just how polarised people are right now. Anyway, I want to move on, because if you're spending your bank holiday Monday doing a few chores, doing the supermarket shop, are you intending on paying for it? That is a serious question, because quite a lot of people ain't intending on paying for it these days. They literally just go in and nick what they want. I was in a supermarket last month when I heard some shouting at the back of the store. I looked over to see a man literally swiping ice cream into his bag. It was an expensive brand of ice cream by the looks of it. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how far he's going to take it before he melted or whatever. I mean, presumably this is kind of like stealing to order that he must have been up to, if he's got some kind of market to sell this ice cream in. The shop staff shouted at him to put it back. I started filming it on my phone, thinking it might be helpful in some way. So he dropped the ice cream and then ran over to the chewing gum counter and started swiping that in, boxes, whole boxes of that again. Like, how can you, I don't know, what's the market for chewing gum out there? It just feels like this stuff must be being stolen to order. Anyway, he started shouting, "Don't touch me," to the supermarket staff. And they didn't touch him, as if the staff in the shop were somehow posing the risk to him. You know, how dare you try and touch me? All that sort of thing. The absolute outrage of someone trying to stop him from stealing. As I said, they didn't touch him. They let him go. I suspect they probably have a policy of not being allowed to grab people, partly for their own safety. I went over to them afterwards and said, you know, you're all right. It was pretty horrible situation. And I said, you know, if you need it, I filmed it on my phone. They said, don't bother. Don't waste your time. Quite frankly, the video won't help us. We don't even bother reporting half of it because it never goes anywhere. In fact, they had little recorders clipped onto their T-shirts, little cameras, and I think they had been recording some of it. But they said that just most of the time, there's just no point. Unless it's been like a really mega, mega serious incident of someone stealing hundreds upon hundreds of pounds or being violent towards them, it's just no point in reporting it to the police. And now we learn today that 800 cases of shoplifting went unsolved every day last year. 800 cases a day. A day. Imagine the amount of money that adds up to. We don't have data on that because, of course, 800 cases going unsolved. We don't even know how much they stole. Is it any wonder that people just feel able these days to wander into a shop and swipe whatever they want? Now, one police and crime commissioner, Matthew Barker, he's the PCC for Thames Valley, he says that actually we should be doing more as citizens. We should film it like I did. We should shout at the shoplifter and even physically intervene if we feel able to. So there you go. It's up to us now to stop shoplifting in this country. Do you think that's what it's come to, that we should step in? Would you feel able to do that and risk your own safety? I sort of can't. I'm definitely not a have-a-go hero. Don't get me wrong. I'm not painting myself as some kind of hero here. I just can't kind of help it. I get annoyed when I see people taking the mick like that, and I can't kind of help but get involved. I don't know whether I'd tackle them to the ground, but, you know, like in this case in the shop, I filmed it in the hope that somehow justice would be done. Turned out that was utterly useless, as I say. I kind of can't just let it go, though. It just angers me. I think it's unfair. And I think, you know, if the rest of us are all paying, they should have to pay too. And we can't have people just completely taking the mick. But what would you do in that scenario? Would you apprehend a shoplifter, as this police and crime commissioner suggests that you might well need to, if police aren't coming out and solving these crimes or even trying to apprehend any of the suspects? Is it up to us to do all of this? Are you willing to? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. You can text me as well, 84850. Now, Alan Moore is a retired Metropolitan Police officer, so let's ask Alan what he would do. Morning, Alan.
Paul.
What do you reckon, then? Have you seen shoplifting going on? I bet you have. We've all seen it now. What would you do, and what have you done in that situation?
Well, I think certainly in places like the metropolitan districts, where there is a concentration of shops, there's the opportunity, the bigger shops, the more attractive shops. But I mean, that's to say where I live in Norfolk, it wouldn't be uncommon to see people filling up a trolley and walking out and then going unchallenged with a trolley full of booze, which is, you know, valuable to them. Whether that's again for the ready market or whether that's for personal consumption. It's not right. Personally, I'd intervene, but again, as a somebody who's done it for a living, and again, with the blue blood trickling through my veins, I'd find it hard not to intervene, even though, you know, being retired, I still know what to do. And, you know, at the end of the day, as applying the Peelian principle, the police are the public and the public are the police. So.
What would you advise someone to do? And look, you know, let's put in some caveats here. This isn't official advice. No one's going to sue you, Alan, if they follow through with your advice and it doesn't work out well. But generally speaking, you know, if you're in a shop, someone's shoplifting, what is the best way to try and scupper them?
I personally make an announcement and say, why is it right that you people pay for your shopping and this person thinks it's okay not to? Because then you
shame
get the support
them.
Of... yeah, why not? At the end of the day, again, what you did, video it. Yes, it's non-confrontational. You know, it's down to the individual. Your legal powers under Section 24A of the Police Criminal Evidence Act and also common law power allows citizens, because obviously police officers do have the extra powers, but it allows for a citizen's arrest within the caveat. And again, just by looking up on the internet, people can find out what their powers are. But again, it comes down to the individual. If that person is offering violence, is it worth putting yourself on the line? And also, you know, what you can do legally, with the use of force under Section 3 of the Criminal Law Act, you know, is what you are doing to restrain this person, to detain them or to arrest them as a citizen, is it actually legal? And if it's not, could you be offering yourself up for intervention and subsequent prosecution anyway for doing what you think is the right thing?
Yeah, because that's the thing, is apprehending them these days comes with all sorts of added complications. Like, you know, the shop staff, I didn't ask them why they didn't stop the guy that I saw shoplifting. But the fact that he was shouting, don't touch me, don't touch me, was that kind of vibe of like, if you touch me, I could sue you or whatever, or I could get off the hook because you're not supposed to hurt me. So I think some people, aside from the risk of violence towards them, would also be reluctant to apprehend someone because they might end up getting in trouble themselves. They'll say, oh, well, you broke my arm or something when you tackled me to the floor, and I'm going to now take a lawsuit out against you or try and accuse you of actual bodily harm. So is that kind of a risk in this situation as well?
It's always going to be a risk. Police officers, by their education, by their experience, their exposure to people who offer up violence, and they have preserved powers as well. You know, they're used to doing it. They know they should be trained and knowledgeable in the application of that use of force. And unfortunately for a civilian, this includes those who are security guards, whose job it is to ideally prevent, frustrate theft or otherwise, or detect it. Again, they've got to be confident in what they're doing. And if they're not confident, or they don't have the empowerment perhaps of the people who've contracted them in, who want a non-confrontation policy, and they're quite willing to swallow that loss within the company, then, you know, it's going to be difficult for somebody to feel confident. Again, with the fact that to restrain somebody, there are certain ways in which you can incapacitate them or otherwise, but is it lawful? Is it proportionate? Is it legal? And is it actually necessary? So again, for a small amount, a packet of chewing gum, but then other people will get £400 or £500 worth of prime meat or alcohol and walk out the shop and go, well, what are you going to do about it?
Absolutely. Why do you think shoplifting is on the rise? We've heard lots of arguments over the past couple of years. You know, police office numbers are down, cost of living crisis means people are desperate, etc., etc., etc. How would you characterise this rise in shoplifting?
A lot of the people are recidivists, so therefore they are repeat offenders. The judicial system doesn't lock people up. And I can remember certainly in 1987 when I joined the police, there was an aphorism that said 80% of the crime is committed by 8% of the population. Therefore, lock up that 8% of the population and you will reduce your crime overnight by 80%. And I'd be interested to see what the figure was now, sort of getting on for 40 years down the line. But I bet it's not a lot of different.
Well, they're talking about shorter sentences now. They're talking about scrapping short sentences and locking up fewer people now.
Again, where does it stop? Because if you are going into a supermarket and stealing something that is relatively low value and you know that you're not going to change, then when you go to a designer shop somewhere else which charges a lot more for their items and you walk out with the same attitude, again, where does it stop? It's not necessarily zero tolerance, but there's got to be a line drawn in the sand. And I think by citizens making a stand, whether it be by literally staying in the shop, again, fare evaders, why should I pay for a train ticket when this person thinks it's okay not to? It's a start, but I mean, I think we all know what the answer is, but there's no prison space. The judicial system is overloaded. The police are overloaded. And you can't blame the police in this situation. I think, there's so much more on them. And the bottom line for me is always support your local sheriff, you know, no matter what. We've got to put our backing in the police. That's the first line. And then the judicial system needs to be funded, needs to be resourced everywhere down the line, right from the point where we put them before a court for charging and an appropriate sentence to prevent them from carrying on committing crime.
All right. Alan, thank you. That's really helpful to get your view on all of that as a retired Met police officer. That was Alan Moore there. What do you make of that then? So Alan says that, you know, he is absolutely tempted to intervene because of that blue blood running through his veins from being in the police service. But would you intervene if you saw a shoplifter? You probably have seen one. I say if. I mean, I think we've all seen one now over the past couple of years. Do you think Matthew Barber, this police and crime commissioner for Thames Valley, is right to suggest that maybe it is up to us now to either film it, shout at the shoplifter, or even physically intervene if we feel able to? Or do you think that's just, you know, asking for trouble? There's no way you'd want to risk it. You don't know what the person's going to do in return. 0345 60 60 973. You can text me as well, 84850. It's 11:15. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.75% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that countryside getaway with the family. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.65% gross. Terms apply.
The seagull says, your IKEA food favourites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
The new Big Arch has arrived at McDonald's. A burger so iconic, it's got its own sauce. A signature Big Arch sauce. Sounds serious, doesn't it? It is. Seriously good. Big Arch. The big McDonald's hunger. Until 9th of September, from 11 a.m, participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me?
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus. Great prizes. Real winners. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
Paul Brand on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
Good morning, it's Interpol Brand here on LBC. So what would you do if you saw a shoplifter? Well, if you're Debbie in Cheshunt, you would intervene. Morning, Debbie.
Morning, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for phoning in. What happened? Tell us what you did.
Well, many years ago, I did intervene a shoplifter in Sainsbury's. Only for the sheer fact that the guy that was a security man was sort of not very young. He was sort of an eldish security man. Mm. And this young boy was causing a lot of grief to him, and he had stuff in his hand and he was taunting him. And then the security man tried to take off the stuff he'd stolen, and he was verbally and he was trying to hold him down, and he was hit. And I did actually intervene. I suppose the boy was about 15, 16 years old. Anyway, I've gone over to him and I've sort of gone from behind and pulled him back from the security, because he started lashing. It was all sort of verbal at first. Then he started lashing out and hitting right. him and punching him. And there was other people around, and there was strong men there as well. And nobody sort of, they just stood there and watched this. Sort of, it wasn't a strong security man. I think he was just a deterrent, but he was quite old. Mm. And I just thought nobody, I was getting more annoyed with people around me that weren't even trying to help him. And I thought, well, somebody's got to. And I suppose, like the gentleman before, he says your blue blood runs through your vein. Mm. It did. And I just shot in there and I tried to push the boy back. Anyway, he dropped the stuff and he did run away. But the fact is, even though I'm a lot older now, I would still intervene. I did it for the reason I didn't want to see the security man get hurt.
Yeah.
And that's, I wasn't thinking about what he was stealing. It was him hurting another person. Mm. And that's what made my blood boil. And people just sort of stood there and thought, oh, it's nothing to do with me. And yet people could have helped, but they didn't.
All right, Debbie, thank you. I want to bring in Graham as well from Eastbourne, because Graham's phoned in. And you've got a really recent example, Graham. And also, it's an example of what can happen if you do intervene. Morning to you.
Good morning. Up until recently, I was actually a security officer in Mayfair in the West End. Pretty much all of the high-end boutiques in Bond Street, Selfridges, Wonder Room, the watch room in Selfridges, and Harrods. And every single one of those shops had a blanket policy for the security guard not to intervene.
Right.
We were literally there as a visual deterrent only, but if somebody did actually attempt shoplifting, we would just stand back and let them get out of the shop. That was it. And so to suggest that the public or people with blue bloods, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree. It's so frustrating to see these thieves get away with whatever it was. And we were powerless to do anything about it. We just had to stand back.
I think people feel very frustrated about all of that. Graham, thank you. It was actually Eamon in Kingston. Sorry, apologies, Eamon. It was you that had recently intervened. Tell us what happened. Morning.
Good morning, Paul. Yes, I was. It all happened on Thursday. This Thursday, I was in Tesco's in New Malden, and a guy brazenly sort of stole some meat products and kicked the fire exit door open and ran out. And I just followed him, caught him about 400 yards up the road. Struggled with him. He dropped the food. I struggled with him. I didn't want to just let him go and just accept having the food returned. Mm. I wanted him to be arrested. So I kept hold of him. But after a short while, he pulled a knife out of me and thrust it towards my face.
God, right. So in that situation, what did you do then? At that point, you've got to back off, right?
Well, I held on for about possibly another 10 seconds, and he was, it looked like he was still determined to do that again. So I let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have any choice in that situation. How do you feel about that now? Would you intervene again?
I would do the same tomorrow, Paul. Yes.
Really? Even though you were clearly at risk there?
We just have to. I think we have to. Mm. I think if we just rely on the police to act on these moments, then we deserve what we get. I think you know, we're all duty bound to do something. I mean, these people just act with no fear of being caught. And that's due to the attitude that most people have. The reason I acted when I did was because there was about three or four people just laughing as he kicked the fire exit door open. And I thought that was that's the attitude that's out there, you know, and it's horrible.
It's not
a small thing. I don't think this sort of brazen type of shoplifting is a small thing at all. It's very serious, I would say.
Yeah, and if it starts with that, where does it lead to? You know, I'll just have your car while you're in the shop. I'll pinch that, and off I go, and we'll let that one go as well. You know, you do have to worry about the sort of slippery slope where this all leads us to. And I think that's what surprised me, and I've seen shoplifting a couple of times now, as lots of people have. What surprised me the other day was just how brazen it was and how there's no sense of shame anymore. You know, when I was a kid, we were taught that stealing was wrong. And if you got caught doing it, it was blooming embarrassing, you know, when you were a kid and you don't know right from wrong. And maybe you nick a couple of penny sweets. And if someone caught you, you'd feel utterly humiliated, embarrassed and remorseful. Whereas the shoplifter I saw, it was in a Tesco, you know, they shouted at him, put it all down, and he just kept on shouting back at them in full view of loads of other customers, swiping other things. He just went to a different shelf. I'll swipe this chewing gum now. You know, there was no sense of like, oh, I've been called out. Oh, I might just have to skulk away as quietly as I can and hope that nobody saw my face. It's just the kind of like, yeah, I'm here and I'm stealing. So what are you going to do about it? It's a whole other ball game now, isn't it?
I'm glad you brought that point, Paul. I thought it was a bit of a dinosaur's view, but I agree totally. But I think we need to change this attitude. I think we people are told not to intervene. I mean, even security staff are told the same thing. You know, so if shoplifters think that they can always get away with it, as long as they don't get caught red-handed by a police officer who's round the corner, they're just going to get away with it. And that's where we are, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that going on about kind of, you know, nothing's going to happen to me if I get caught. But I think there's another thing as well going on underneath in terms of the change of attitudes. And like I say, this sort of sense that there's no longer any shame in breaking the law. I think maybe 10, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have needed a police officer breathing down your neck to stop you from doing this kind of thing. You would have just felt the social unease and shame of doing it. And if you got caught even just by another citizen or a security guard, you'd just feel utterly, utterly abysmal.
I know. That reminds me of when I was young. That attitude was prevalent. I think that genie is well out of the bottle. I don't think we can put that back in. I just think we have to work on people's attitudes.
Yeah. All right, well, Eamon, I hope you're not too shaken up anyway by that knife being pulled on you last week, and I think a lot of people would admire you for stepping in. Although, also, it's a reminder of what can happen if you do intervene. Thanks so much for your call. China's in Woking. Morning to you, China.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think there are two sides to the story. Mine is this. I'm a retired appropriate adult. I won't say which area, but I covered two custody suites. And I saw both sides of the coin, where you would have the police would pull someone in for shoplifting unless they'd spent stolen over £200 worth of goods. On other instances, I saw where someone had just been released from prison and he had no... there was nothing he could do but to go and shoplift so that he would be brought into custody because he'd run out of medication, having been just released from prison. He was sleeping rough in a just above a supermarket in a car park, and the only way he was going to eat and be safe was to be pulled into custody. And to do this, he would shoplift, say, £60 worth of goods. I totally agree with your last caller. I myself saw instances that have made me retire from being an appropriate adult because they were too vicious. They generally had to do with mental health or someone at the end of desperation. Of the other side of the coin, I agree with the last caller, is somebody who's just horrible and is doing it to take the goods down the local pub and sell them on for a super steak for half the price. So it's really, really difficult to have seen both sides of it. But I myself would pull somebody up. I have done. In our local supermarket, I watched someone walk in with a bag and just fill it full of steak. And I screamed, but nothing was done. So I agree, yeah. I would tackle them.
And there's different types of shoplifting going on. I mean, Jay's texted in, why are you not addressing that people are perhaps stealing because the economy is in the gutter and people can't afford to buy the food they are stealing? I don't doubt that that is part of why some people shoplift out of utter desperation, or in the case that you're talking about, China, someone shoplifts because the criminal justice system and the probation system is under strain, and actually the easiest thing for them is just to get arrested again and to go back into the system. But there's another type of shoplifting which I think, you know, isn't covered by that, which is just this brazen organised crime, quite frankly. I mean, like this guy that I saw sweeping expensive ice cream into his bag, he wasn't doing it because either he was hungry or because he just needed a small offence in order to get rearrested. He was doing it, I would imagine, so he can go and sell it on somewhere else. So I think there are lots of different reasons behind shoplifting.
I totally agree. And at the last recourse, the police officer, the retired police officer, is quite right. The Met is absolutely, and other police services in the country, they cannot take in shoplifters because they've got much more serious, really dire mental health, underage crime, behavioural crime that is just out of control in this country. And if less base routes are sorted, unless you get right down to the crux of the situation, which is mental health, children without boundaries, bad parenting, bad education, and a bad social system, people will continue to do this, unfortunately.
All right, China, thanks for your call. Thanks for your insight there with your expertise in this area. That was really, really interesting to talk to you. What do you think is driving the epidemic of shoplifting, and would you intervene? Because that's what one police and crime commissioner is now advising. Shout at them, film them, even physically intervene if you feel able to. Do you feel able to? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Coming up in a few minutes' time, 10 child protection groups have written an urgent letter to the Home Secretary to demand that a serious strategy addressing violence against women also focuses on abuse faced by girls as well. You've heard before the phrase violence against women and girls. Well, girls seems to have been dropped off the end, potentially, of the strategy the government's about to bring forward. There's great concern about all of that. We'll be speaking to our reporter in a few minutes' time. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC. The time is 11:31. Let's get the news headlines now with David Dom.
The Hamas-run health ministry says four journalists are among at least 15 people killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in southern Gaza. It happened at the Nasser hospital this morning. The Israeli government haven't commented. The Liberal Democrats have called the number of unsolved shoplifting cases shameful. Their data shows more than half of investigations across England and Wales last year failed to identify a suspect. And emergency services are responding after a helicopter crashed in a field in the Isle of Wight. It happened just after 9:20. This morning, the ambulance service says specialist teams are working on the scene. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK, cloud developing in the west, and highs of 28 degrees.
LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.75% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that safari, luxury cruise, or relaxing retreat. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18+ UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.65% gross. Terms apply.
Time for a new Mercedes-Benz? Finding your perfect car is simpler than ever. Right now, there are offers across the range, like the A180 AMG Line Executive Hatchback from £299 a month with an advance rental of £6,368. Don't miss our hottest offers this summer. Visit us at Mercedes-Benz. PCH offer ends 30th September. 4-year lease subject to status and availability. T's and C's apply. Mercedes-Benz Finance. Mercedes-Benz is accredited to medium, not a lender. Commission paid. Speak to us for details.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Woods and cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name. Experts in money. A hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount. Promised a great return. Took all I had. And then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated. And every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL.
Paul Brand on LBC. Text 84850.
Good morning, it's Paul Brand on LBC. Now, I mentioned a few minutes ago this story that's making waves this morning about the fact that the government's new strategy for ending violence against women and girls may no longer cover girls, children. It might just be focused on women. There are concerns from many charities who work on this area that girls have been dropped off the end of that strategy. What's going on? Well, Helen Hollinott is LBC's reporter and has been following this. Helen, explain a bit more about this story.
So, Paul, some background on this. Ministers have promised to halve violence against women and girls in a decade, with this strategy expected to be published in September. And successive governments have tried to tackle violence against women and girls, or VOG, and this will be the fourth strategy published in the last 15 years. But children still account for 40% of all victims of sexual offences in England and Wales, despite making up just 20% of the population. So the success of this strategy, of course, could not be any more pressing. And advocate groups say it is a real opportunity to make tangible change. But earlier this month, it was revealed that child sexual exploitation and abuse might not be explicitly included in the scope of this strategy. And now these 10 major child rights organisations, including Barnardo's, the MSPCC, they've all written to the government to warn that a promise to tackle VOG can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sexual abuse. Anna Edmondson is the head of policy at NSPCC and says girls are at risk of being failed.
Each year, around 500,000 children in England and Wales will experience some form of sexual abuse. And though this affects all children, including boys, we know that girls overwhelmingly bear the brunt of some forms of sexual abuse and violence, including that taking place online. The strategy will really miss a golden opportunity. The needs and best interests of those girls will be overlooked once again.
So this letter to the Home Secretary says that VOG and child sexual abuse are inherently and deeply connected, with shared root causes like gender inequality, misogyny and power imbalances, meaning that a coordinated and joined up response is going to be vital in trying to go anywhere in tackling this. The government says that their VOG programme will include action to tackle child sexual abuse, but they say they want to create a distinctive separate plan to, in their words, ensure that those crimes get the specialist response they demand. But now some survivors are not very happy about this. Poppy Eyre was abused by her grandfather. She says her message to the government is that if they're going to make child sexual abuse a separate focus in this strategy, then they need that to be fully implemented now.
VOG is violence against women and girls. If you take child sexual abuse out of it, where are the girls? What are the police forces now doing? Are they holding child sexual abuse at the same level of importance as they are with violence against women? You'd hope so, but potentially not, because it doesn't need to be in the figures. It doesn't need to be. And that's being quite cynical. But children are once again being left in the air with no one advocating for them at the moment.
So a government spokesperson has said that this forthcoming VOG strategy will include targeted action to tackle child sexual exploitation and abuse. We know that it's meant to be published fairly soon, maybe in the next few weeks. So any changes that come about would have to be made quickly.
All right, Helen. I mean, I think politically it'd be toxic if they dropped child sexual abuse from this strategy, particularly given the amount of focus we've seen this year on grooming gangs as just one element of the abuse of girls and women. That was Helen Hodnott there, LBC's reporter, giving us the latest on this story. Let's see how that develops into September when Parliament returns. Right, I want to talk about shoplifting again now, because so many of you have called and texted in out of sheer outrage, I think, about the number of people getting away with shoplifting. Del's in Edinburgh. Morning to you, Del.
Good morning, Paul.
So you see it all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in Edinburgh. It's a capital city, and it's a small capital city, so everything's compacted. But I can follow a piece of meat from my local shop that I go to and know exactly where it's going to be sold in 20 minutes after it's been lifted.
Where do they where do they sell it to, do you think? Just direct to other customers?
Yeah, they'll I mean, I don't want to get too into it, but you will find people in parks or go into pubs or wait outside shops.
I've heard about them going into pubs,
The other thing is,
I don't think I'd want someone's manky meat that they've taken from a supermarket. How long has it been out for? Well, I'd be a bit worried about getting a dicky tummy.
Another thing, Paul, this has been going on for years. I remember my dad buying dodgy goods in a pub years ago when I was young, and I'm nearly 60. So it's not a modern phenomenon. I think what it is the fact that no one actually tackles it anymore. The security guards don't react, and if they catch them, they just take the goods off them and let them go. They don't even try to arrest them anymore, and the police will never turn up. Okay, the chances of you even seeing a policeman turn up for shoplifting is rarer than the rocking horse.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what surprised me. I mean, I can't say it shocked me, because I wasn't wholly, you know, surprised, I suppose, but it disappointed me when I saw the shoplifting the other day, because it was actually really horrible for the staff. You know, they let it go and they said there's no point. And I just felt that sense of injustice for them, actually, because they'd had a mouthful of abuse. They'd had shouting, ranting, raving, not quite physical abuse, but there was, you know, it was obvious there was a sort of physical threat with it all, because the guy was so loud and obnoxious and he just seemed a bit threatening. And I just thought, actually, it's just not fair on the shop staff.
That's
a real injustice.
Caller.
Yeah, sure.
He said something about children. I've noticed that the age of some of these shoplifters are getting younger and younger, and their attitude to things like the police and security guards is bad. Now, when I saw it the other day, I won't mention where I was, what shop it is, but as soon as they tried to tackle the child started to threaten them that they would get the police on them for touching them inappropriately. Mm. And so the security guard just backed off. This child drove his scooter into the shop, okay, and just started picking things up. And when they tried to tackle him, he threatened them with the police for inappropriate touching and then went out the shop. And as for challenging them, never challenge a child. It's knives, it's needles, it's anything. It's their mates waiting outside. I've seen that before. Where you go out and the one bloke's gone in and you come out and there's three of them on either bikes or they're waiting on a corner. You're going to get in trouble. You should never tackle shoplifters in these modern times. Never.
Mm. Yeah, a few people texting in, actually. Jazz says, "Hi, Paul, as an ex-police officer, I would never intervene. Why would I risk my safety for a low-level theft?" So some people just think it's not worth it. Adele, thank you for your call. Charlie is phoned in from Luton. Morning, Charlie.
Morning, how's it going? I kind of agree with the chat that was just speaking just now, and probably wanted to get a bit further on that in a second. But in regards to what China said, I think before your break, I completely agree with her. But the things I wanted to say in regards to, you know, the police officer saying we should chime in, just two things really. Number one, the reality of being charged for something like this is very real, right? I'm a relatively big individual. I can handle myself. I can probably take down any shoplifter pretty quickly with ease. There was an elderly lady speaking about defending a chap in the Tesco's or something who was quite elderly and was having a problem apprehending somebody. And I was thinking, well, you know, she said she was more angry with the big lads hanging around looking, and I would laugh or video it, but I wouldn't get involved for that one reason. But if I get involved, and unfortunately this guy cracks his head off the side of a till or something like that, I'm just going to be in trouble. So why on earth would I get involved? And I think that's one thing that I have a bit of an issue with. And the second thing, relatively quickly, because I know you haven't got that much time, for me anyway, is charged and I could get hurt. And that was the other thing.
Yeah. Right?
So, and all these people saying they could jump in. I think you've mentioned it a few times as well. You could get badly hurt. Like the same way I could hurt the person stealing something, it's the same way those people could hurt me, right? And it's very, very real. Like the chap that you said who had the knife, Pulled out on him, right, in certain places in South London. They pull out a knife and they will slice your face open. And so I don't
get
this whole we should be the people kind of get, you know, I understand the police are under pressure. I understand, you know, the climate at the moment. I fully understand that. But to say that we should get involved, I'd like to hear a lot more other people's views on that, because there's a lot of guys that can handle those people, but if you know you're going to get slapped with a fine and put in jail because you broke someone's arm, like, I mean, I break someone's arm pretty easily if they're stealing meat and doing all sorts of stuff, so we can step in, but there's a bloody reason why we're not doing that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think sort of, you know, you have to take your cue as well from the staff, and that's what I was thinking the other day when they were watching this guy shoplift. If they're not physically intervening, there's probably a reason why, which is they've been told don't do it because it's not worth the risk to your own safety. So if their employer, which is ultimately losing money through this, is even telling them, look, don't worry about it, we'll just have to take the hit, then, as you know, as bystanders, we've got to kind of take that into account as well, haven't we, and think, is it worth 100%. Our public safety? We're not going to get anything out of it, ultimately. Tesco's not going to say to me, oh, here's a £50 voucher for intervening, are they?
No. And until those companies actually start to lose a lot more, because I think some of your callers have said, you know, people, I mean, in the chat just now, and, you know, when he's 60 now and his dad was young, he was buying meat in the local pub or whatever. Mm. You know, if it continues, people will probably say, well, if you're not going to get nicked for it, well, God, just pinch that little sweet or whatever. But again, I think it was China that mentioned that, you know, her last bit that she said was where this is all stemming from, and she mentioned family and upbringing and blah blah blah. I fully agree with her, and I think there has to be a titanic shift in how we're bringing up people in the environment we live in. But yeah, that's what I'd say.
All right, Charlie, thanks so much for your call on that point about buying meat in the pub. Eve texted in, say, she's quoting me back, I'd not buy stolen meat, I'd be scared of getting a dicky tummy. Another public schoolboy broadcaster, says Eve. I went to comprehensive school in South Wales, Eve. Where do you go? I'm not posh, I'm just picky. Right, it's 11:45, you're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
This is LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes, the ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe, to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
A frozen berry blast, please. All right, love.
Do you know what I've done?
Now, what have you done?
You see Pete sleeping over there? I got the sun cream and I've only gone and drawn it on his back.
Nice. Oh, but that's not Pete. Isn't it?
Oh, very funny.
Avoid having the wrong kind of fun in the sun. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1, including sunglasses, from £70 with single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Paul Brand on LBC. Text 84850.
Morning, you're listening to Paul Brand here on LBC. We're going to continue with your calls on shoplifting. So many of you feel strongly about this one. Annie is phoning in from Reading. Morning, Annie.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
You sound Welsh, Paul. Annie. How'd you end up in Reading?
I'm Irish.
Irish.
I'm Irish.
I can't even recognise my own countrymen now.
And I absolutely love it.
Okay. All right. Anyway, sorry. I'm going off topic.
There's a couple of points, Paul. I was brought up in Ireland with a big, massive family. We didn't have a lot, okay? But we were brought up to respect society, people, and other people's property.
Mm-hmm.
I would never, I am absolutely fuming what people get away with. I would never, ever have thought of going and shoplifting, whatever. So we're talking about shoplifting. Would I intervene? Paul, I would love to. However, I would be absolutely petrified, and that is so sad. I am a 65-year-old woman. So, the first point is, kids do it, yeah? As young as 8 and 9, I know they do it.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, you know, you could intervene. No, I wouldn't, because some kids, they discipline, they don't have it at home, right? And I firmly believe that. So, if I was to intervene, I guarantee you that the parents of those kids would then make my life hell, okay? I would not bother doing it, and I think the discipline has to start at home. And then you move up. They are people, sadly, that have addictions, yeah? I have all the sympathy for them in the world. They have addictions. Would I apprehend somebody that has an addiction that's stealing for whatever reason?
Yeah.
No. It's sad to say, you know why, Paul? I would be petrified that they would pull a knife on me.
Yeah, especially, you know, if they are on drugs, for example, they might not have a rational response.
I don't judge them. But for the grace of God, there go any of us. I don't judge them. I just think there should be more help given to them, okay?
Mm.
Somebody that has got mental health issues, and I know people might say, oh, can't keep blaming mental health, blah, blah, blah. It is real, and it is a serious problem in our society. Mm. They need more help. The governments, et cetera, need to do more. And then you have the scumbags, I'm sorry, that just do it because they think they can get away with it. And they are getting away with it.
Yeah.
Would I apprehend them? No. Just say they didn't pull a knife for me. What happens if they follow me out of the shop, the supermarket? I don't know.
Yeah.
That they're then going to attack me. And then there's the repercussions. Maybe I'll have to give a statement. And I know it's sad, but I'm sure there's a lot of people, especially 65-year-old people, that are petrified. And it's wrong. We shouldn't be petrified. We should be able to intervene. But sadly, Paul, we can't.
You don't
feel
able to.
We just cannot intervene. I wish I could. And 20 years ago, I would probably have done it. And if you can just give me the time, Paul, it wasn't here. It was in Ireland. A couple of months ago, a sister of mine, it wasn't a supermarket, she does her shopping, blah-de-blah-de-blah, she's 4 foot something. She came out of the shop to cross the road, and her son was waiting for her in the car. He was a drug addict. She said he was a drug addict, she could tell, and he tried to grab, her bag was on her shoulder, not across her body, it was on her shoulder. He tried to grab her bag. She doesn't have a lot, Paul, but he whacked him. Yeah, she whacked him across the face, and he ran off. Yeah, he was taller than her. He might have been in his mid-20s. Okay, he went. But I said to her, if you had injured him, she would be the one that would be in trouble. So when she got back to her son's car, her son said, she knew the street he went up, and she said, let's go and follow him. And you know what my sister said? And there's, thank God there's so many good people in society. She said, he wanted to also go back to the shop, outside the shop, there was CCTV.
Mm.
And she said no, because she was afraid that she would be done for assaulting him.
Yeah.
And secondly, she's got two boys of her own, and they're great kids. And she said, he is somebody's son. That mother has probably gone through hell with him, and she didn't want to take any more trouble to that woman's door.
Mm. Well, yeah, fascinating, Annie. And also, a lot of people are messaging in talking about self-service checkout, which I think is a fair point, you know, that maybe that's why there's been this rise in shoplifting as well, because people can get away with it. There isn't a person there physically always checking that you're definitely paying for everything. I think, though, with some of the shoplifting we're seeing, it doesn't really explain it. Like, you know, like this guy I saw in the supermarket the other day sweeping things off the shelves. That's not someone who gets to the self-service checkouts and just sort of slips a few extra things into their bag that they haven't paid paid for, and they hope that the weighing scales let them get away with it. It's more brazen than that. There's more to it than that, I think, than just the self-service checkouts. And Annie, it sounds like in the example that you've used from Ireland, you know, obviously someone grabbing, was it your friend's bag?
I mean, they don't care.
They don't care, do they? It's brazen, and they don't care who sees them and who's watching. They just feel like there's no consequences.
And I've got to say this as well, Paul. I have 150% respect for the police in England. Yeah, I know they get a lot of criticism. If somebody said to me tomorrow, if I was in my 20s, we would give you £100,000 a year to police in this country, Ireland, any country, to be honest, I would say never. Every day they're going out there and they are risking their lives. They don't know what they're going to come across. They get abused from youngsters who their parents should be dealt with, not the youngsters.
Mm.
And secondly, it makes me angry, Paul, because the police are expected to deal with these shoplifters when there is so much more horrible stuff going on that they are trying to deal with. But as far as intervening, no, unless there was about 5 or 6 of us in the supermarket that could hold that scumbag until the police come. No, I wouldn't do it, Paul. I'd be afraid.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of myself to say that I would be afraid.
Well, nobody's blaming you for being afraid. Yeah, no one's blaming you for being afraid. I think it's a really fair point. And you know, as other people have texted in to say, is it worth it if someone's stealing, say, 15 quid's worth of goods? Is it worth your safety to intervene over that, especially when, you know, it's coming out of the supermarket's profits? Although, you know, they pass on the cost of theft, I'm sure, to us as customers. Annie, thank you so much for your call. Great to talk to you. Philip's in Bognor Regis. Philip, you were a director of a manufacturing company, weren't you? So give us that perspective on all of this. Why? What more could companies be doing to stop this going on?
Right. Good morning. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak. Okay. It's important that people realise that companies have huge responsibilities for almost everything, absolutely everything inside, everything that goes on, regardless who does it. And also to a wide extent, quite a large amount of space in and around them, okay? It's not the customer's responsibility, and it's not the employer's responsibility, unless you're an appointed security guard, to worry about these things or to deal with them. For the reasons that people have said, you get involved in something else, and it's not your fault. So people shouldn't feel guilty about this. It's the companies. If companies want to stop shoplifting, they can. They can put security in, and they've got the law on their side, and they should deal with it themselves. People, customers, can go and tell the security, that's it. Don't do anything else. You can advise security. They should already know. They've got cameras. You know, and the problem we've got in this country is that basically people are not taking responsibility for their own affairs. Mm-hmm. You know, if everybody was 100% on their own affairs, the society that we live in would be much, much better. And by that, I mean people, I mean companies, businesses, everything, shops. You know, we really must get control of our own affairs and be honest with ourselves, because we cannot expect somebody to come running along and help us out when we've made a mistake. And shoplifting is a mistake made by the business. Mm. So that's all I would say.
All right. Philip, thank you. So it's on the business to crack down and sort it out. Anita's in Aldershot. Anita, I want to squeeze you in because you wanted to bring something up that is actually being used now by some businesses, I've noticed. This idea of naming and shaming people who shoplift, putting their pictures on the shop window or videos on social media. And that seems to be working. Morning to you.
Hi there. No, I wasn't thinking of putting it on social media. I was thinking about pictures, but not tiny wee pictures, decent sized pictures of when you're going to the supermarket. It could say, beware, shoplifter. Actually, like name and shame. But do it publicly. Make it so people are aware that when they do go in, oh, I see that guy. And also have perhaps more security, not just at the door where they're watching a lot of screens, but perhaps in different aisles. I know that costs money, but surely in the end it will save money and they'll know that they are being watched. But name and shame, definitely.
Mm.
But not in a wee picture, in a big picture as you go in the door, so you're seeing, and it'll make me feel that, oh well, I better not go in here and do this. That's just what I'm thinking. As I said to the lady I spoke to earlier, that I remember months and months ago when I was out for a run in the morning, came back to Tesco's, 7 in the morning, did a bit of shopping, £62 worth, was stopped on my way out and asked if the guy could look at my shopping, because some of it was in a bag, some of it was just in a trolley. He obviously thought I'd littered something. Find my receipt. Eventually I did, went back to checkout. And I'm thinking, I'm getting stopped at my age, and I know I don't look like a thief, but, so surely we need to be tighter on the people that they know who are coming in to actually shoplift.
Yeah. All right, Anita, thanks so much. Patrick Sexton to say, you can't name and shame, it's often against GDPR. So, you know, if that's the case, what can you do? Because you can't grab them and physically apprehend them in case you hurt them, and then they can turn the law back on you, and you can't name and shame them because you might be violating their privacy under GDPR. Not sure how you solve the shoplifting crisis, quite frankly, but thanks for all of your ideas and all of your calls and texts over the last hour. Coming up after 12, we're going to talk about another form of very antisocial behaviour. This one isn't about stealing per se, but it does rob us of our peace and quiet. How do you feel when someone boards a train or a bus and starts blasting out their music on their phone, or even conducts a call on speakerphone shouting into their device? The Tories have said today they want an immediate fine on the spot for people caught doing this. The Lib Dems have previously called for something very, very similar, but there are already bylaws against this kind of antisocial behaviour on trains. It's just that they're not being enforced. So would this actually change anything? And a bit like with shoplifting, is it up to us to call it out?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, 4 journalists are among 15 people killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in southern Gaza, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. It happened at the Nasser hospital this morning. LBC's been updated by Middle East correspondent Yotam Confino.
It's been 3 hours since this attack, and people are looking for answers. They want to know what exactly they were targeting, why they were targeting that area, and why we saw a second round of explosions right after the first attack, which is apparently also what killed more people in this attack.
The Israeli military says it will conduct an inquiry as soon as possible. Emergency services are responding to a helicopter crash in a field in the Isle of Wight. Officers were called to the A3020 Shanklin Road around 9:30 this morning. The ambulance service says specialist teams are working on the scene. Figures show nearly 800 shoplifting cases have been gone unsolved every day. The data obtained by the Liberal Democrats shows just 18% resulted in someone being charged across England and Wales. Lib Dem MP for Maidenhead, Joshua Reynolds, told LBC the figures are shocking.
I worked in retail for a number of years, and I know how dangerous it can be to confront shoplifters where you don't know what their reaction will be. We've been very clear, it's for the police to protect us rather than to pass the buck.
The sole survivor of a meal made with poisonous mushrooms in Australia says he forgives the woman who tried to kill him. Ian Wilkinson's wife and 2 close friends died after the mushrooms were served in a beef Wellington 2 years ago. Erin Patterson, who was found guilty of 3 counts of murder, will be sentenced next month. Public transport users could face tougher punishments for playing music out loud on buses. The Tories are pushing for tougher enforcement of antisocial behaviour laws, which are already in place. The changes to the Bus Services Bill are being tabled by the Shadow Transport Secretary, Richard Holden.
I think if people are fare dodging, if people are playing music loudly on the tube, then I would suggest that there is probably going to be, if somebody's breaking the law in one area, there's a likelihood they're probably breaking the law in other areas as well. If they're not wanting to be a part of society, I think you'll see this broken window through.
LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK, with some cloud developing in the west, rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Paul Brand.
Good afternoon, it's Paul Brand here on LBC. Great to have your company this bank holiday Monday. Now, are you taking public transport anywhere today? Because if the chances are, if you are, you may well have your peace and quiet disturbed by someone blasting out music or having a very loud conversation on their phone. Now the Conservative Party has jumped on the bandwagon to say it wants to issue fines to people on the spot for doing this on trains and on buses. The Lib Dems had already previously said that they wanted to target headphone dodgers, as they call them, with a similar kind of policy. Does this get your goat when you're on public transport? And a bit like we were talking about shoplifting earlier, what do you do about it? Do you intervene? Because there are actually bylaws already, particularly on trains, which should be stopping people from doing this. But the problem is, as ever, it's not enforced, is it? Like, when was the last time you saw a police officer, British Transport Police, parading up and down a train carriage or even a conductor, you know, on loads and loads of trains, particularly sort of London Underground trains? You don't really have conductors, quite frankly. You do on National Rail, don't you? But how often is this really going to be enforced? We already have the power in some cases to stop this from happening. It's just not the power is not being used. Would you intervene and tell someone to just shut the, for goodness sake, up if they were listening to music blasting out of their phone? 0345 6060 973. Paul Kohler is Liberal Democrat transport spokesperson and MP for Wimbledon. Morning to you, well, afternoon now to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Paul.
So, the Tories have sort of nicked your policy.
Well, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. It is a bit galling, though, because when I raised it in Prime Minister's questions, they actually jeered me. And then when I raised an amendment in the bus bill committee stage, they wouldn't support it. So only, you know, 2 months ago, they refused to support this amendment to the bus bill to criminalise this activity, and they allowed Labour to vote it down. So I find it, I'm pleased they're supporting me, but find it galling they've taken so long and forgetting what they did previously.
Okay, so what was your original idea? What was it that the Lib Dems were proposing? Just talk us through it.
We wanted £1,000 fine. That didn't preclude also fixed penalty notices. Both of those were possible. We wanted to publicise what's there to make it simpler, because the legislation at the moment is complicated. It doesn't apply to buses. So we wanted a publicity campaign, a nice, simple provision in the legislation to make it clear that using telephones without headphones is antisocial and should be penalised. And we wanted to push that at every level.
But who's going to enforce it? That's going to be the problem, right, Paul? Who's actually going to enforce it?
Well, you say this. One, there's a difference between this and shoplifting. Shoplifting is always mendacious. When someone shoplifts, they're doing something they know is wrong. Mm. Often when people have got their head, not using headphones, they're just being thoughtless. So a lot of the time, it's just reminding people, and therefore a publicity campaign would help that. There are also British Transport Police. There are also revenue enforcement officers on trains. And something I've been talking to South West Rail about recently is that we need to get guards outside of rush hour walking through trains. That would change the whole atmosphere. And so one possibility is guards actually walking through trains and talking to people nicely about, look, do you realise that's being antisocial? A lot of the time it's thoughtlessness, and just reminding people is sufficient.
I did actually see a guard on a train doing that once. Relatively recently, someone was blasting something out on the phone, and they said, look, you can't behave like that on a... It wasn't even a quiet carriage, but they still sort of enforced it and said, you can't behave like that, you're upsetting...
And what happened?
Upsetting travellers around you. Yeah, they did, actually. They shut it off, and they were apologetic. But if you want more of this, then you need more guards. That's the problem, right?
Well, remember, we have guards on all overground trains, and you often get the message... I know when I get on the train in Wimbledon, you'll often hear the line, I'm in the middle carriage, if you have any problems, come and see me. Now, if someone is suffering from some sort of antisocial behaviour or intimidation, it's often impossible to get to the middle carriage. Outside of rush hours, there's no reason why guards can't walk through the train. They can operate the doors from any particular carriage. And when I raised this with South West Rail, I was pushing at an open door. They saw that as a possibility. Now, guards on trains are a good thing, but let's use them more effectively.
Mm. There are people as well texting in, Paul, as we're speaking, saying that there are bigger issues in the world that need sorting out. And if we're diverting resources from, say, catching fare dodgers to catching people who are blasting out their music, are we really focusing on the big issues? We're sort of focusing on trivial things that really are about social etiquette rather than about breaking the law.
Of course there are bigger issues in the world, but dealing with these minor issues helps address that lack of lawlessness, that lack of courtesy, that lack of consideration for other people. Therefore, I see this as part of the solution, not a diversion.
Okay. All right, Paul, what are you going to do about it when you go back to Parliament and the Tories are nicking your policy?
Bizarrely, we've already put in our amendment to the bus bill, the one they voted down 2 months ago in committee. Now, at the third reading, they have a chance to vote for it again. I'm looking forward to seeing what Richard Horden has to say to me.
All right, yeah, let's monitor that one closely. Paul, thank you for your time this morning, or this afternoon. Oh, I can't get the hang of the fact that it's just turned 12 o'clock. That was Paul Kohler there, who's Liberal Democrat spokesperson for Transport and MP for Wimbledon. And as you heard Richard Holden saying on Ben Kentish's show this morning when he was sitting in on breakfast, Richard Holden, Tory spokesperson on this issue this morning, was saying they want to do the same thing as the Lib Dems. They want to slap a fine on people to stop them from doing this antisocial thing of getting out their phone, blasting music, or having a really loud conversation. I want to ask you a couple of things this hour. Firstly, what would you do in that situation? A bit like we were saying about shoplifting last hour. Would you intervene? Have you intervened? Have you told people to shut up and to be more considerate? But also, do you think this is part of a general slide when it comes to social etiquette? Just poorer behaviour, whether it's people eating really hot, smelly food on trains, or people being rude, putting their feet on the seats. You can translate this to all different walks of life. Are people just less considerate these days? Have we lost our sense of kind of social duty and responsibility in the way that we behave to others sitting around us? 0345 6060 973. Stephen's phoned in from Morden. Afternoon to you, Stephen.
Hello, good afternoon. Yeah, the point I was going to make is it's definitely down to a slide in any kind of social, acceptable social behaviour in this country. I travel to Japan a lot. If you dare get your phone out and have a conversation on the underground, on the Shinkansens, the bullet trains, the local buses, I'd say within 15 seconds you've got passengers that will literally take that phone out of your hands.
Really?
They will not have it. Oh, absolutely right.
They're big on that. They're big on that social etiquette in Japan. I remember when I went to Japan, people said to me before, don't eat on public transport. They think it's exactly. Really, really gross. It's like sort of sneezing without covering your nose or whatever, your mouth.
But kids there, people there, their society is very, very respectful. They're brought up in a completely different way to us. There is no respect anymore here. There used to be, but there isn't anymore. And it's all walks of life that do it. Young kids, older people. There is no, you know, you can't nail it down to one, you know, one generation. Everyone does it. There is no one cares anymore. Like I say, there is no social etiquette in this country anymore. You need to travel abroad to see how they do it, because they do it and they do it well. But, you know, like everything in this country, we can't seem to run a bath these days. But there you go. It's maybe they should travel to Japan and see how it works there.
Yeah.
It does work, and it works very well.
Yeah, and a lot of people are picking up on this thing about sort of social etiquette and people just not caring anymore how they treat those around them. I mean, Andrew's texting as well saying, why aren't there announcements on the train reminding passengers not to play music loudly or to carry out other antisocial behaviour? They could do that. And Paul Kohler from the Lib Dems there was saying, why not have like a publicity campaign? But it's a bit depressing, isn't it, if we've come to that we have to say to people, right, we're going to explain the basics of behaving well to you, Steve.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think it begins in schools. But, you know, I don't know, I shouldn't say this, what value teachers have really anymore. They just seem to teach kids they can do whatever they want, whenever they want, and this is half the problem. You go to other countries and other cultures don't work that way. They don't have the problems that we have, and it's just getting worse here. You know, you can link it all into the shoplifting, if you like. It's just ongoing.
Yeah, I'm sure teachers would say, Stephen, they do their best, but they can only deal with what the parents give them as well. It's ultimately the parents' responsibility, isn't it, to teach their kids good manners?
It is, but you spend a lot of time in school. When I went to school in the 60s, it was all very, very different, you know. We learned very quickly, right from wrong.
All right, thanks for your call. This lunchtime, let's talk to Luke as well, who's phoned in from Manchester. Afternoon to you, Luke.
Hello.
You intervened.
Yes.
So I frequently take the Manchester to London train for work. And I always book for quiet carriage because I feel like it's the only place where I feel I can sort of really try to enforce the idea you shouldn't be taking phone calls or playing music. Occasionally, someone tries to take a phone call or something like that, and it annoys me enough that I'll approach them. And most of the time, they respond pretty well. They'll get off the call pretty quickly. But one occasion really comes to mind where I approached this guy. It wasn't his first phone call. It was his second phone call of the journey. He was taking them in quick succession. So I approached him and said, I'm really sorry, but this is the quiet coach. You're not allowed to take phone calls here. And he responded, just wanted to brush me off. He's like, seriously? You think that's something enforced? Like, you just didn't care. And I said, do you want me to get the train guard? He said, sure, go and get the train guard. So later, the ticket inspector came along before I sort of found the train guard. So I asked the ticket inspector, can you remind the gentleman in this seat that this is the quiet coach and he's not allowed to take phone calls in this carriage. You can take them elsewhere in the train, but not this carriage.
Hmm.
At this point, the gentleman, he's a quite a big guy, actually. You know, I didn't realize till he stood up. He stands up and he just goes on a big rant about how I'm stopping him from taking important phone calls. Why do I care so much about these rules? Why do I care? Like, I can just put on some headphones or something like that. And he's clearly very aggravated. And after he finishes this big, quite unpleasant speech, the ticket inspector just turns to me and says, I think he got the message, and then she just leaves. The guy didn't take another phone call for the rest of the journey, so presumably he did get the message, but it was very much left up to me to stand up to this guy, and I didn't feel very backed up by the train staff.
Yeah. I mean, the difficulty for the train staff as well. I mean, in that situation, obviously, the two of you could have both tag teamed and said, look, you stop behaving badly. I've had train staff say to me before when I've been on a train and I've seen people dodging tickets and things, they say sometimes it's not worth the hassle. Again, a bit like with shoplifting we were discussing before. If you intervene and you give someone a telling off, you don't know what they're going to do in response sometimes.
I'm a tall guy, and I guess I feel somewhat confident approaching people and not feeling like I'm going to get attacked on public transport or anything. I know not everyone's going to feel the same way, and it does take a lot of confidence to stand up to someone. And a lot of the time, I'm kind of sitting there thinking, can I bear, I'm sort of weighing up, is this annoying me enough that I'm going to feel confident enough to stand up to this person? It depends how long the journey is and how long they're on their phone call or playing music for. I did contact the train company afterwards about what happened. And they said that unlike fare dodging and similar offences like that, the quiet coach is not something they are actually able to enforce. And it is simply up to passengers to try and respect it, which I was really surprised by, because it just made it seem like, oh, okay, so the quiet coach is
optional.
Basically just a sign and it's optional, like, which is ridiculous.
All right, Luke. Good luck to you in your crusade against headphone dodgers on the trains that you regularly take. Thanks so much for your call. Are you like Luke? Do you just tell people, actually, you're just behaving really badly? It might not even just be headphone dodgers. It could be all sorts of people behaving badly, whether they're eating food in a place where they shouldn't be, whether they're talking loudly, behaving antisocially, drinking on the Underground. You're not supposed to drink on the London Underground anymore, but you still see people doing it. Would you pull them up on it, or do you just think, actually, it's not worth the hassle? Littering annoys me. Littering is one of my biggest bugbears. I went around my park recently. Again, I'm not some kind of like sort of social angel here, but my son is really into carrying around a litter picker because every four-year-old loves a device. And we went round and we picked up some litter the other day. He really enjoyed himself, satisfaction of it. And then about 5 minutes later, I saw someone else dropping litter and I just thought, it's so annoying, for when people don't care about the environment around them. They don't care about the way other people are using that space. What about people not giving up their seats for the elderly? Have you called that one out before? Do we need to just develop better civic duty towards one another, better manners towards one another? What has happened to manners in this country? 0345 6060973. You can text me as well, 84850. Nick says, there are no guards on my southern train service into London. I've not seen a guard in 21 years of using the route. Is that a problem? I'm sure Southern Trains would dispute that, Nick. I'll let them take that up with you. But is that part of the problem here? If we're going to enforce this headphone usage, who's going to enforce it? Are we honestly saying we want to divert police resources or up the cost of a train ticket by having guards on there to walk up and down and tell people just how to basically behave? Do we really, really want to be putting resource into it? That's a big question for me coming out of these policies today from the Tories and the Lib Dems. Right, more of your calls to come in a few minutes' time. It's 12:18. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
This is LBC.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh, ¿cómo estás?
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
This is LBC with Paul Brand. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Afternoon, you're listening to Paul Brand on LBC. Lots of you are texting in with your bugbears, the antisocial behaviour that drives you mad. Dave says, I can't and won't use the canteen at work because of colleagues using their phones on loudspeaker. Management don't seem interested when I've complained. So not just on trains and buses, also in canteens. Priya says the kids on school visits with their teachers on the tube and trains in London are terrible. They scream and jump around the carriages on the tube / buses / trains. It's awful when they're in the carriages. The teachers say nothing. It all starts there, she says. Paul says, in my local social club, there's a man who spits on the floor indoors and the staff just wipe it up. They don't ever challenge him. That is pretty gross, isn't it? I don't think I've ever seen that before. Spitting outside, maybe. Or, you know, the really awful spitting. You know the kind I'm going to talk about, where they really, really want to cough up that phlegm. I mean, that is utterly, utterly grotesque. I've never seen someone do it indoors, though, only outdoors. But still, save that for the privacy of your own home, I think. Richard's phoned in from Enfield. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, hi. So, in regards to the music on, there already is in place.
There's a bylaw. There is a bylaw, yeah.
Yeah, to prevent loud music. And I think they've got to remember the reasons why they exist. And one of the main reasons for those bylaws is for emergency announcements, public announcements, so they can be clearly heard. And I think it should be enforced. But then you've got a double-edged sword because you've got busking going on. You've also got all other entertainments on or outside on for premises belonging to TfL or the railway industry. So it is a double-edged sword when they're trying to stop it from one end and then allowing it in other parts.
Yeah, it's under kind of unacceptable behaviour in the bylaws of TfL. But who's enforcing them? That's the thing, right? They're already there. Yeah. No one's enforcing them. So that's what I question about the Lib Dem and the Tory policy is. It's all very well saying we'll introduce fines or we'll toughen up bylaws and extend them to buses. But no one's there to enforce any of this. It won't make any difference, will it?
It's down to the people that run TfL, and according to the TfL bylaws, the people responsible for enforcing that are staff, TfL officers, and sometimes British Transport Police. And it clearly says sometimes British Transport Police. So there is no definitive of an authority that can enforce it. The only authority there is the sometimes British Transport Police.
Mm.
It's the only real authority. Other than that, you've got staff get told all sorts of stuff. All the time when they're trying to tell people to get back from the yellow line, they get a load of abuse. So can you only imagine in a confined space what would happen or the fear of staff to actually enforce that? Mm-hmm. There's no backup, and you need to back up our public sector services. And as taxpayers, we're paying for this public service, and we want the best public services that we could probably use, and the safest probably as well. But to be honest, it's not a major problem with the loudspeakers. It's not an everyday occurrence. It's a small group in a period of time. Kids on the school bus route, kids on the way back. Mainly, the argumentative is children using their phones for
Now, right, this is what I was going to say. I don't understand this thing these days, right, about having every call on loudspeaker. When I was growing up and mobile phones first became a thing, you just put the phone next to your ear. Then they evolved a bit more and you could plug headphones into them. Now you have wireless headphones. So I don't understand why you need a call to be on loudspeaker. What's that about?
You don't. It's just that's the thing that people do. It's just the thing people do at home. People use TikTok. They use all these other social medias that you can talk to, chat. And it's all face related. So if you're talking to someone on face, that's an automatic loudspeaker system.
Mm.
If you're talking to somebody on, it really does depend on what you're doing. I mean, I've not really seen, to be perfectly honest, someone having a full business meeting on a phone on loudspeaker system.
I haven't seen a business meeting. I think I think maybe you hit the nail on the head there, Richard, which is that people FaceTime each other now, don't they? They want to do face calls. And I suppose
exactly
with that, you can't be putting the phone to your ear, otherwise they're just going to get a shot of your ear hole. But if you hold it in front of your face and put them on loudspeaker, then you can conduct a conversation face-to-face over the phone. So that must be part of it. That's the trend now, is that you FaceTime rather than an audio call.
Yeah, loud music is the trend. I mean, we've got people making channels on TikTok going on and playing loud music, and it's socially at that point on the video, you'll think clearly acceptable to those people in the carriage. It's not acceptable to everyone, but you can see that everyone's having a good time. Sometimes a little bit of music will lighten up the mood. The drivers sometimes make a funny announcement to lighten up the mood of people. So it all really depends on how you take it and how you perceive it.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
Music is everywhere. It's naturally in our system. We love music no matter what, who you are. You love a bit of music. So it's the type of music. Is it appropriate for the atmosphere of where we are? The buskers, are they playing appropriate music as well? Because I like listening to a bit of music on the train. If I can get a signal, I listen to LBC in my headset all the time on Global. So there's so much difference you can do. But we have it in the public, we have it outside, we have it above stations, we have it inside stations. It's sort of a double-edged sword. It's a non-enforceable rule that we should just be present to our surroundings when doing it.
Yeah, Richard, thank you. Thanks so much for your call. I'd be a bit too embarrassed, I think, to blast music out on my phone. I feel like everyone would, like, look at you and then... I don't know, they'd judge your taste in music as well, wouldn't they? I'm just not confident enough in being cool enough to blast a song out on a public transport in case people think I'm an absolute loser. Good point in from Sue. Sue says, my dad is hard of hearing, so he has to have his phone on loudspeaker. Take no issue with that, Sue. That's a fair point. Although you can get these really cool hearing aids now where you can actually take a phone call through your hearing aid. But I appreciate they're probably not available on the NHS, so not available to everyone. But there are ways and means of dealing with being hard of hearing, aren't there? And definitely not the case, in all probability, that the teenagers jumping on your train are hard of hearing. So, you know, why not just put the headphones in? That's what I don't get. I don't get this culture now of shouting into your phone when you're having a phone call. Anyway, Françoise has phoned in from Hampstead. Afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon. I wanted to tell you a story that happened to me a little while ago. You see, I'm an old lady, and with age, I've become more intolerant and cantankerous, as one does. And I was sitting on the bus, and three youths came and sat on the over through the aisle, the seat opposite me, and they started putting, all three of them put their feet on the seats.
Their feet on the seats?
Yeah, on the seat opposite. So I said, can you please, I was polite. I said, can you please put your feet down? And they said, why should we? So I said, because this is a public transport, people are going to come and sit, and the seat may be dirty. Please, you put your feet down. No, we don't have to. So I said, look, they were quite, they were about 18, 20, like that. And I said, would you do this at home?
Ah, that's the classic. And, would you do this at home?
Oh, no, of course not. No, of course not. So I said, why? Well, why do you do it here? So they said, oh, well, this is not our home. So I said, yes, well, it's your home while you are on this bus, because you're sitting in it like you sit at home. So please treat it like your home. What would your parents say? They said, oh, gosh, they'd be so angry. So I said, yes, they'd be angry. And so I am angry. I'm also a parent, and I wouldn't like my children to put their feet on the seat in a public trip transport. So you know what they did? Put your, their feet down. So it paid off.
Good. Good for you.
Yes, I know. But then afterwards, I was thinking to myself, you know, what have I done? You know, they could have jumped on me and beaten me up or something. But no, they were quite compliant and said, oh, well, you know, we better do as she says.
So we need to get you on all trains and buses. Are you available to be employed by whichever train operator it is that we need you to go and patrol on, Françoise?
Well, mind you, on the underground, when I go, I walk in, and if there is no seat, I said, very loud, I said, oh, could I sit down, please? And there's always somebody that gets up, I've noticed. You know, you have to be present. You have to be there. You have to make your rights known in order to get what you want. And yeah, what I want is sit down. and I do.
Good for you. We need more of you, Françoise. We need more of you. Can we clone you and roll you out across the network?
I don't know.
Thanks so much for your call.
That's not what my husband would say, but...
thanks so much for your call. Quite a few people texting in to say you can get those newfangled hearing aids on the NHS where you can connect to your phone. So there you go. There's no excuse even for the hard of hearing now, necessarily. Let's not be mean about the hard of hearing. It's not their fault. But there are ways of getting around that. If you want to be able to hear your phone, apparently, you can get the, you can get those hearing aids on the NHS and plug into your phone that way. A couple more of you texting in as well about the kind of things that annoy you. One of the biggest offenders, says Mara, is adults entertaining their young children. So yeah, I think I have seen that, you know, where they're blasting out something on the iPad to try and keep their kids happy. Brian says, I'm a train guard. It bugs the heck out of me. I'll say something, but when I'm out of the carriage, it's straight back on again. And that's the problem, isn't it? There aren't enough people to police it, even if you do ban blasting out music or phone calls or being antisocial. Who is literally going to patrol that train carriage and make sure people stick to it? Keep your calls and texts coming in. It's just gone 12:32. Let's get the news headlines now with Daryl Jackson.
Five journalists are among 20 people killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in southern Gaza, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. It happened at the Nasser hospital this morning. The Israeli military says it will conduct an inquiry as soon as possible. One person's been airlifted to hospital in Southampton following a helicopter crash on the Isle of Wight this morning. It happened in a field near to the town of Ventnor. And figures show nearly 800 shoplifting cases have been going unsolved every day. The data obtained by the Liberal Democrats shows just 18% resulted in someone being charged across England and Wales. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK today. Some cloud developing in the west, highs of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
You subscribe to music, TV, your gym, maybe even your weekly flowers. So why not your car? A Pivotal car subscription comes with serious horsepower. One simple monthly payment puts you behind the wheel of a Range Rover or Defender, with everything from insurance to servicing taken care of. No long-term commitments, no complications. Experience exceptional driving without the hassle of ownership or leasing. With Pivotal car subscription, subscribe to smarter driving. Find out more at drivepivotal.com/radio.
Emma from Leeds. Talk to me.
Sir, I had two doubles, but Claire had five. And it's not like I'm there counting. Well, OK, I guess I am. But for her to want me to pay half the bill... when
I'm losing it. Doubles. She should just do what I do. Bank with Monzo and share the bill in the app. Split it fairly down to the double and get paid straight away. Easy.
And she had tiramisu.
Monzo. Split bills in seconds. UK residents, T's and C's apply.
Hearing this means you're one step closer to winning a huge £20,000. That's a step closer to dream holidays, home refurbs, or a brand new car. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message Paul Brandt on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60973.
Good afternoon, it's Paul Brand here on LBC. Back to your calls and texts in a few minutes' time. But first, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the situation in Gaza, because at least 15 people, including four journalists working for international media, are reported to have been killed in an Israeli strike on a hospital in southern Gaza, the Nasser Hospital. They include a Reuters cameraman, an Associated Press journalist, an Al Jazeera journalist. Several people were killed in an initial strike and then others in a second strike, which happened as rescuers attended the scene. Now, it's not, of course, that the lives of a journalist matter any more than the lives of anybody else. But there are particular concerns about journalists being killed in Gaza because, you know, if they're not there to tell the story, then how do we know exactly what's going on, particularly when Israel won't allow other international journalists who aren't already based in Gaza to travel into the Strip. Armin Nadjer is a Palestinian political economist, writer and playwright, and joins me now. Thanks for joining me, Ahmed. Depressingly, this is, you know, yet another story about journalists losing their lives. And again, I stress that it's not that their lives matter more than any other life that's been lost in Gaza. But there are particular concerns, aren't there, around the fact that stories may not be told if we don't have eyes and ears on the ground to tell them in Gaza.
Absolutely. I think this is another tragedy. We haven't even stopped grieving the Anas al-Sharif and his colleagues that were killed a few weeks ago, the Al Jazeera correspondents. And now we are faced with another four journalists being killed. Journalists have been targeted from day one in this genocide that now is mounting to about 240 journalists that have been killed, which is unprecedented. We have never witnessed any war around the world in our history that has that many journalists being killed. So, and the fact that also Israel is not allowing international journalists is to try and commit its genocide in the dark. So definitely right now, the journalists are targeted, particularly targeted. And I have just noticed some of the journalists started in Gaza started to deactivate their social media accounts and try to keep low profile, which is completely, you know, wrong, because these guys need to be in the event to report on what's going on. Mm. And that's exactly what Israel really is after, is to kill all the eyes that that are trying to reveal the Israeli war crimes and genocide.
I mean, the IDF has said in response to all of this, the IDF regrets any harm to uninvolved individuals and does not target journalists. So the line from the IDF is still this insistence that they don't target journalists. But Ahmed, quite clearly, you're not satisfied by that.
The IDF is a genocidal army. Let's admit to this. Let's face it. All international organizations around the world or experts in genocides have concluded that the IDF is committing a genocide in Gaza. How could we believe a genocidal army that telling us that they're not targeting journalists after killing 240 journalists? And then do you actually expect us to believe what a word that coming out from their mouth? We see their government is wanted by the ICC. How could we trust people like that? I think it's absurd to actually believe one single word that's coming out from their mouth. They lie right, left and center. They have killed more than 60,000 people in the space of 2 years. Can you just imagine that they destroyed all or the entire Gaza Strip? They also have actually killed these journalists in a hospital. So it's not just the crime of killing journalists. They have killed them in a hospital. So they were attacking a hospital, which they have attacked more than 35 hospitals in Gaza. So obviously they're going to be repeating their narrative, which is, oh, we're investigating. We never target journalists. So we have done this and that. And we have the story about the civil defense when they killed them and buried them and buried their vehicles, and they denied their involvement in that. And later on, they found a mobile phone in the pocket of one of these people who were killed, filming everything that happened. So, and then let's talk, you know, if we want to bring like Shireen Abu Akleh, the journalist who was sniped by one of the snipers in the West Bank, and then they denied, and then they proved that they were involved and they targeted her deliberately. And the list is endless. I can speak about their war crimes until tomorrow, or maybe there won't be enough time to speak about the war crimes that Israel is committing.
Yeah, and look, you're not a lone voice in that. There are many people who are very concerned about what's happening in Gaza. It's my job as a journalist just to introduce the other argument. I know you understand that, Ahmed. And Israel, of course, denies that there's a genocide. And I suppose the difference they're trying to point out is that they say they're not deliberately targeting journalists. It's that journalists are dying in what is a dangerous zone. But you clearly feel that's not true, that journalists are actually being singled out and targeted.
Of course, they killed Anas al-Sharif and they accused him of being Hamas member without having any kind of proof or anything. Look, Israel has been acting with impunity for far too long, and they actually have killed those journalists. They have killed them in front of the camera, right in front of the camera. That was Al-Ghad TV were filming already the attacks that was in the hospital, and they attacked again and another the journalists were killed. So they really fear nothing. If they actually think that they will held accountable for their actions, they wouldn't be doing that. And let's be honest, the West has allowed them to do that. I'm sorry that the Western media has covered up for their war crimes for so long. And that's why they dare to commit this type of war crimes that they're committing. Look, up until this moment...
I don't think that's fair on the Western media, actually. I think the Western media...
Look at the BBC, for example. You guys are still not calling what's happening in Gaza as a genocide. Why aren't you calling it as a genocide? Why aren't you naming it as a genocide? 7th of October, you all named it as a massacre. Up until this moment, none of you, absolutely none of you, called any of what happened in Gaza as a massacre. Today, we are encountering a massacre against journalists. You haven't named it as a massacre. This is the language that the Western media is using, and that is complicit. And that's complicit in this genocide. You guys have called the Rwanda genocide as a genocide 4 years before the court decision came out. In spite of the fact that there's far more overwhelming evidence that there's a genocide in Gaza, Western media still hasn't called it as a genocide. This is complicit, and this is allowing Israel to carry on with its genocide. Look, the Western governments also haven't imposed any kind of sanctions. They're still selling arms to Israel. Can you believe it? There's a declared famine, man-made famine in Gaza, and the Western governments are still supplying Israel with weapons, are still supporting Israel. They haven't sanctioned Israel. They're still trading with Israel. They're still a business as usual with Israel. Can you believe that? I mean, what else they need from Israel to do, to cross how many red lines for them to act? So this is directly being involved in a genocide.
Okay, well, look, I you're more than welcome to criticise the Western media on this show. I think there are lots of Western journalists absolutely desperate to get into Gaza so they can see for themselves what's happening and to report what's happening. But unfortunately, Israel doesn't allow us to go in there. Look, Ahmed, thank you so much for your time this lunchtime. That was Ahmed Najjar there, who's a Palestinian political economist, writer and playwright, talking about the latest deaths in Gaza, including four journalists. The IDF, I should say again, insisted it acts to mitigate harm to uninvolved individuals as much as possible while maintaining the safety of IDF troops. And in January last year, the ICJ ruled that the claim of genocide was plausible in Gaza, but that the media can't call it a genocide because it's a legal term and it's not up to the media to adjudicate. I want to get back to our conversation about more trivial matters now, let's say. Behaviour on trains and other public transport. Lots of you texting in about your frustrations with the way people conduct themselves. Steve says, your freedom to play your music ends where my ears begin. There's something to that, isn't there? That we can have freedom to do whatever we want as long as we're not imposing ourselves on other people. Stephen in North Ayrshire, different Steve or Stephen, says people sitting on the train and taking up a seat with their bag annoys him. Careless entitlement, it enrages me, says Stephen. And Julia says, since lockdown ended, speeding in 30 mile per hour roads in excess of 50 miles per hour is commonplace, and there are countless illegal loud exhausts which backfire. I feel sorry for people with ADHD and autism who are triggered and startled by loud noises. Julia, thank you very much for your text. What is it that frustrates you when you see poor behaviour happening on public transport? 0345 6060 973. You can text me as well, 84850. Back to more of your calls and texts in a few minutes' time. It's 12:45. You're listening to Paul Brand on LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Asma Mia.
Do more St George's flags on the streets mean we are becoming more patriotic or more intolerant?
Asma Mia on LBC.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Look, there's a snail! And its eyes are sticking out of its tentacles. It looks like an ice cream.
Ella sees a lot more than just a snail. With free kids' glasses from Specsavers, plus a second pair from £10, they'll see a world of wonders. And you'll see a great deal, too. So book them an appointment at Specsavers today, for free. £10 second pair with free glasses from our £65 and above range.
Conditions apply. See online for details.
There now follows a message from the Prime Minister.
Some of you may know, my husband is being held hostage. They are targeting me. They have weaponized my family. I will not be threatened. My loyalties are to this country. I will not allow it to be held to ransom. And anyone who thinks that I would has badly underestimated me.
Hostage, starring Saran Jones, now playing only on Netflix. Leading Britain's conversation with Paul Brand. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Paul Brand here on LBC. Shanti says people putting their makeup on and cutting their nails on public transport annoys her. Cutting their nails, I haven't seen that one. Seen plenty of makeup being applied, although to be fair, I kind of sort of admire it. Like, how can you do that on a bumpy train without wobbly eyeliner or whatever it is you're applying? I think it takes some skills. But cutting their nails, yeah, that would be a definite no-no for me. Naomi's called in from Hammersmith. Afternoon to you, Naomi.
Hello, hello, good afternoon. I hope you're well. Yes, I felt very moved by the previous piece, so I sort of feel like, yes, you're right, we've gone back to the trivial.
But, we have. Okay. But, you know, we can do the whole spectrum. Really big, important news and the more trivial. Yeah, we can deal with it all.
Absolutely. That's what LBC is like, and it's brilliant for it. I felt compelled to phone about this topic you're doing because I can't stand it anymore. And it's not just because I'm middle-aged now. It's not. It's just I've always been very sensitive and not been able to cope with big groups and loud noises. Mm. And I cannot bear the people just putting their videos on and just taking very loud calls. If ever I have to take a call, if it's an emergency for a family member particularly, I can't stand being heard on public transport. It's like maybe a bit of social anxiety I've got. So I'll scoot off the bus as soon as possible and then call the person back. I don't understand why we're all different, but I can't understand why so people just... Well, you mentioned it before that you would never play your music loud. It's an embarrassment thing. Mm. I'm the same. I just could never be loud in public. It's just... Even when I'm standing next to an actual friend in real life, if they start talking in a crowded tube, I can't bear it because I just sort of don't want to be the only person who's talking really loudly, you know.
Yeah, you just got to have such courage of conviction in your own music choice as well, as I was saying earlier. Yes. I mean, someone was taking the mickey out of me on the text saying, don't worry, we want to hear your Bucks Fizz mixtape on the... It's worse than that, I can tell you. It's much worse than that.
Well, for me, it would be Bowie, and I don't know.
There you go. That's pretty cool.
People who'd love it.
Yeah.
But can I say one more thing? I don't want to hog the time, but I have a very good sort of humorous attitude to litter. And this is something I developed about at least 20 years ago. I heard it from someone else, so I can't take the credit. But I heard that somebody advocated saying to someone, you seem to have dropped this, if they drop something. And actually, it's really funny. It does work. The person sort of looks at you extremely shocked that you've sort of apprehended them in that sort of funny way. So for me, I'm only 5'4" and I'm female, obviously. I can't sort of, I do have to take into account somebody might punch me or get angry at me if I even politely say, look, please, can you put your music down or you've got this. So I've got to do it in humorous ways or extremely polite ways. So I find the sort of humour attitude is quite good. When I saw a Miranda episode of her cutting somebody's headphones, I just thought, I wish I could do that. But of course, no normal person would ever, you know, that would be a terrible way to do it. I could say so many different things. But I don't want I heard somebody in a doctor's waiting room saying to an old man who might have been deaf, and he said to him, please, can you turn your phone down? Hmm. And actually, the man was very rude to the man that had said it. But I stood up for him. I said, well, actually, I think the same. And I didn't say it so that we were
That's
both getting
way.
At the old man. But I think people need to be brave and stand up for other people when they see people so that then there's a bit more safety in numbers.
Yeah.
You never have to attack somebody or say something nastily or rudely. You just say it politely and then stand up for other things that you see around you that need to be stood up for. I think people should be brave, have more courage. Of course, choose their battles wisely, not do anything foolish so that you might get punched or shouted at. But just stand up for what you see is right or wrong, I mean.
Mark says on the text, it's a British ailment, Paul. We are often too polite and too tolerant.
Yeah.
Is that
it? Yeah, that's so true. I really do think that's true, but I think we've got to stop being that way. Okay, not sort of be rudely, sort of over brashly, sort of assertive, but just assertively. Signs should be up in TFL areas saying, you know, and quiet coaches should be managed more. I think this country has got to sort of get back to the old-fashioned ways of just standing up for what's right mm-hmm. and wrong, and instead of just the apathy that's in TFL so much of not bothering. And I think there's too much cowardice and just laziness and apathy, and people don't stand up when they should stand up for what's right. I really believe that very strongly. Mm. I mean, even someone like me has been to Glastonbury Festival, and I was amazed at how many people leave their stuff, you know, and they don't follow the love the farm, leave no trace sort of thing. And the whole place is littered with people not taking their litter with them. Mm. And I'm not saying I'm in a self-righteous way, but it's not too difficult to just take everything with you. I take everything with me whenever I've been there. And it's just not difficult to do that. I think people just need to be a bit more mindful. I don't want to sound like a school mom here. Maybe I do, and I'm sorry for that.
No, I don't think you do. I think Yeah, no, I think you're frustrated by the same things as lots of us. And yes. I like your idea, Naomi, that it's sort of like we're all in this together and maybe we should all pipe up. You know, rather than it just being up to one person, two or three of us should all say, look, come on, turn your music off or whatever. Yes. And then it's, it's not exactly one person feeling awkward about it.
Sorry. Absolutely. That's the thing. It's not too difficult to sort of just gently and humorously, or if you don't want to do it humorously, just sort of assertively in a gentle, respectful way, just say, yes, I think that gentleman's right. The music's bothering me as well. You don't have to then pile on to the person who's doing it, but just say it in a good mannered sort of way, you know. Oh, and don't get me started on people not giving their seats up for blind people or disabled or, yes, elderly people. It's just like, just honestly, sometimes I just feel like just saying, if I see people not doing it, and then I don't do it like this because I don't ever want to come across as aggressive, but I just feel like saying, for goodness sake, get up. Because I will just instantly get up for somebody that needs it. You just need to have eyes open and ears open and just see and listen to what's around
you. Just be considerate.
Yeah, exactly. Be considerate of other people. And it doesn't mean then that we get less of the slice of the pie if we're generous and mindful of other people. It actually means more connectivity. And we need that in London, in such a big city where actually there's so much, unfortunately, so much less connectivity. Paradoxically, you would have thought there would be more connectivity because of phones and, you know, online and everything. But actually, paradoxically, there's less connectivity. So we need that human connection. We need to look out for each other. I don't mean it in a kind of stupid, overly Samaritan sort of helpful Samaritan sort of way. I don't mean you go around smiling at everyone and helping everybody. Of course, you've got to still keep, you know, doing our own thing and going about our ways. Can't say hello to everybody. This is London like New York. It's so huge.
Yeah.
It can't suddenly become.
But it's just about standing up for decency, isn't it? And just common decency and politeness. I think maybe we should be a bit more like that, and maybe we're too reluctant to because of that British sort of stiff upper lip, and we sit there and we endure it raging inside, whereas actually if we just took 10 seconds to say, look, please could you turn that off, it's actually distracting me, or it's ruining my peace and quiet. And if a couple of other people piped up and said the same thing, it'd be much better. Naomi, like your style, thank you so much for your call. Peter's in Oxford. Afternoon, Peter.
Afternoon, Paul. I'm going to confess I'm going to be about 50 times shorter than the last caller.
That's good, because we're running out of time.
Yeah, regarding noisy phones on buses, about 10 or 15 years ago, we used to have a thing that you could get from Tandy's or off eBay or the thing, and it was called a phone zapper. And
right.
It was about the size of a credit card, a bit thicker. All you did was, when people were on the buses, you could just get your phone zapper and click it, and all the phones that all the people on the buses, all the noisy people, suddenly all their phones went dead. It was great fun. And you could do it anywhere in the motorway.
That's not going to make you popular. That's almost as bad as the people who were blasting out the music. Because
it was terrible. My heart used to rent. My heart used to break whenever I used to do it. And
but you still did it.
All their phones went dead, and I keep quiet.
Yeah, I know. But these days, so many people use their phones to work. You know, if you're on a train travelling cross-country, for example, loads of people will be doing work and things quietly, squirrelling away on their phones. So, yeah, I like the idea of the zapper, but I think it might be a bit too cruel.
Well, it was very cruel, but good fun.
All right, Peter, thank you. I haven't heard of one of those before, but, yeah, if they exist, let me know if you've used one. Carol's in Leighton. Hi, Carol.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for my call. You know, I've never called LBC, and I just this just resonated with me because I literally had the experience of there's a public bin literally a metre away from our home, and it attracts fly tipping. So invariably, on any given day, there'll be something piling up gradually until the council come around and collect it.
Yeah.
But at the house, and I literally observed this man walk towards the bin. I was on the phone. He had a bag in his hand, and when I looked back, the bag wasn't in his hand anymore. I observed him go inside a house, which is literally five doors down. So I just suddenly thought, you know what, this is just unacceptable. So I knocked on the door, no one answered. And I just had my dad in my mind because it's something that he would absolutely, God bless his soul, would definitely do something about. So I just grabbed the bag and put it outside the door. So I just thought it's just, you know, unless you get up and stand up and say something or do something, the behaviour won't change. Now, don't get me wrong, gone back to the property and there's even more stuff outside. And I have now complained to the council and I've written a letter and all of that jazz.
Fly tipping is a good one, though, honestly.
It's horrific.
Really hit the nail on the head. We'll have to do a whole other hour on fly tipping another time because that's a massive issue that really, really frustrates people. Carol, thank you for your call. Thanks for all your calls and texts this hour on all the gripes that get you going. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. You can download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 3 on LBC, it's Simon Marks, but now it's time for Asma Mir.
Thank you very much. More and more St George's flags on lampposts and roundabouts. What does it all mean? Is it a great mystery? Why now? Is there anything wrong with it? Is it simply national pride or is it something more unpleasant? Flags go up around the Euros, around royal weddings. The reason right now appears to be the debate around immigration. So is that pure patriotism or something else? Why are flags going up and how do they make you feel?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Israeli Defence Forces have confirmed it's carried out a strike on a hospital in Gaza. NASA Hospital reports at least 25 people have died, including journalists and medics. The IDF says it does not target journalists. Ahmed Najjar is a Palestinian political economist and writer and told LBC journalists are at risk in Gaza.
The journalists are targeted, particularly targeted. And I have just noticed some of the journalists started in Gaza, started to deactivate their social media accounts and try to keep low profile, which is completely, you know, wrong because these guys need to be in the event to report on what's going on.
Police on the Isle of Wight say one person's been airlifted to hospital after a helicopter crashed. Officers were called this morning after it came down in a field near to the town of Ventnor. New figures show nearly 300,000 shoplifting cases went unsolved in the last year. Analysis by the Liberal Democrats shows just 18% resulted in someone being charged. The Metropolitan Police had the worst record with less than 6% of cases resulting in a charge. Former Met Police Officer Alan Moores told LBC it's no surprise.
Certainly in places like the Metropolitan Districts where there is a concentration of shops, but to say where I live in Norfolk, it wouldn't be uncommon to see people filling up a trolley and walking out and then going unchallenged with a trolley full of booze.
Campaigners are calling for the new strategy on dealing with violence against women and girls to address child sexual abuse as well. Charities including Barnardo's and the NSPCC are warning the two are inseparable. The government's already insisted its plan will include action on child exploitation and other violent crimes against women and girls. The only survivor of a lunch made with poisonous mushrooms says he's felt half alive since his wife's death, but says he forgives the woman who killed her. 50-year-old Erin Patterson was last month found guilty in Australia of killing three relatives with a beef Wellington 2 years ago. And a series of nationwide strikes by bus drivers is being warned in a dispute over pay and conditions. Around 7,500 members of Unite are either walking out or voting on action in cities including London, Manchester and Newcastle. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK today. Some cloud developing in the west, highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon to you. It is 2 minutes past one. This is Asma Mir sitting in all week for Sheila Fogarty. We've got a lot to go to get through on the programme. There's a lot of recurring themes, really, themes that have been dominating the news over the last couple of weeks, if not months, really. You could even say years. And most of the time it is about around immigration and the kind of secondary issues that come from that. People who are affected by the debate around immigration, of course. We're going to be talking about how MPs feel. They say that online abuse over the immigration debate is getting out of hand. And also really about flags. We're talking a lot about flags because you will have noticed, especially in England, of course, that streets are starting to be covered in St. George's flags. Some of it will have been to do with football, and some of it is to do with a social media campaign, Raise the Colours, which encouraged people to go out and attach St. George's flags to buildings, lampposts, roundabouts, whatever it might be. Now, there is a whole debate, a kind of health and safety debate about you can't put that there because you need permission, etc. And that's that is relevant. But I suppose really what I want to hear from you about today is, what do you think about it? And what, why is it happening? Is it just because of this debate around immigration? Is it because of this social media campaign, Raise the Colour? Is it something else? Are people a bit fed up? Do they feel perhaps that the government isn't doing enough to address their concerns about immigration? Or is this a small hardcore of people who are perhaps extending completely genuine national pride into something else? Maybe you feel incredibly happy and think it's about time, actually, that we took a little bit more pride in our country, in our neighbourhood, etc. And this is how you manifest that. This is how you show it. Or do you think that the timing is unfortunate? For example, if we weren't having a debate around immigration, would we see campaigns like this? Would we hear people telling us to put flags wherever and to feel national pride? Or does one, can one not survive without the other? I don't have a strong opinion on this because I think that I think it depends on the context, doesn't it? It depends on how it makes you feel, and it depends on what the intention is. If the intention is genuinely because you feel incredibly patriotic and perhaps you feel the government isn't doing much about something and this is how you want to perhaps motivate them, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. I know that there are people, and again, it depends on your situation, on how vulnerable you feel, on how included you feel in society, about how you will take the putting up of flags. You might see it as threatening to you. You might see it as making you feel more vulnerable, because you think it might mean that you are more vulnerable or in danger. I think it very much depends on the individual. And I don't think that there is a kind of group mindset about this. I think it is such an individual thing. And I also don't think it matters necessarily about what your racial background or your political background. I think it is a really, really personal, visceral reaction that people have to flags. Some people are incredibly snooty about it. Some people think it's a wonderful thing. And some of you, I suppose, are a bit ambivalent. I don't know. I just think that there is, I don't want to get into categories of, well, I vote X, therefore I don't like flags. I vote Y, therefore I do. I just don't think that's what it is. Anyway, I really want to get into this from you. I've been watching from the sidelines. I've been abroad, actually. I've been in America, and they have such a different approach to flags. There are flags everywhere, but there always have been. So I really want to talk to you today about these flags that are going up, this campaign. How does it make you feel? Are you involved? Have you put a flag up? Have you tried to take one down? I saw that happening as well. Let me know how it makes you feel. 0345 6060 973, that's a number. You can WhatsApp on the same number as well. You can text 84850, and you can ask Alexa, of course, to send a comment to LBC. As I was saying, there are many, many issues that stem from the immigration debate. It's a very layered issue. And one of the things that has happened is that some MPs have experienced a rise in abuse linked to the debate around immigration. Some say that levels of online harassment and death threats are worse than during the Brexit debate. Some people are getting death threats. Some people are feeling unsafe. Some people are perhaps not even able to post themselves. They actually hand it over to someone else to deal with it because it becomes too much for them. And MPs are one of those groups. So let's try and get into that now with Rupa Huck, who is a Labour MP for Ealing Central and Acton. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, hello.
What's your personal view on this? Have you experienced this? Do other MPs that you know experience this on a daily basis? What kind of level are we talking about?
I mean, I think that public figures put themselves out there, and it's been an increasing trend in recent years, I think, to pick up specific issues and, I don't know, see public elected individuals as a bit of a kicking bag to have a go at. I mean, there's always been debate, and that's completely healthy in a democracy. But I think the issue over the weekend, a colleague of mine had death threats over a misleading, deliberately chopped up video that was made holding her responsible for a bit of government policy or a direction that people were unhappy with. I mean, that is, I feel these clickbaity things are just unacceptable when people are deliberately doing it to stoke up fear.